has an extraordinary ability to miss open goals. So if you were to combine those two circumstances, you could probably sell tickets. Luckily, I don't have to, because it's free, and it's with you live from 12. Before that, the royal family and Jeffrey Epstein, Andrew Windsor, or whatever he's calling himself this week, and the unavoidable and quite possibly irremovable stench of scandal. Don't ask you this very often, but how big a problem does this represent?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, Canada's Prime Minister Mark Carney has cancelled a trip to Germany after a mass shooting in British Columbia. At least 9 people were killed at a school and a nearby home in the small town of Tumbler Ridge. Srishti Gangdev, a journalist in Vancouver, has given LBC this update.
We know that police have recovered the suspect's remains at the scene, and they said that the suspect's description matched up to the person that they found. They're not telling us the person's age. They're not telling us their gender. They're not telling us what kind of connection this person may have had to the high school in question or to the home where another 2 victims were found dead in the community.
A government minister has told LBC security measures could be reviewed in schools following a stabbing in northwest London. 2 boys, aged 12 and 13, were seriously injured at Kingsbury High School in Brent yesterday. Counter-terror officers are leading the investigation, but the Met Police say it's not being treated as terrorism. Speaking to LBC this morning, the school's minister, Georgia Gould, praised the response of emergency services.
The school is not far from my constituency, and it's sent absolute shockwaves through our whole community. You've got 2 children who are in hospital. I think all of our thoughts will be with them and their families. The police have acted swiftly. Somebody is in custody, and we are backing the police in their investigation and taking this very seriously.
A 13-year-old boy remains in police custody on suspicion of attempted murder. A group that monitors anti-Semitism in the UK says it saw a spike in incidents in the aftermath of the Manchester synagogue attack. 40 cases were recorded on both the day and the day after last October's attack, the highest daily totals of the year. Sir Keir Starmer is preparing for Prime Minister's questions later after fighting back against pressure to quit. He's promised he won't walk away from his mandate and has hit out at infighting within the Labour Party. And secondary schools in England will be expected to have a so-called inclusion base for pupils with special educational needs and disabilities. The government is setting out a decade-long plan to renew buildings ahead of a planned reform to the sector. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 40 at 10,394. The pound buys $1.36 and €1.14. LBC weather largely cloudy with outbreaks of rain through today. The best of any sunny spells in the south. A high of 13 degrees. From Global's newsroom, for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
When you switch the family's unlimited plans to Vodafone, you save. So while Nan's learning to voice note,
can you hear this? Is this on?
You're saving. While your daughter's setting a new high score on her favourite game.
Get in!
You're saving. While your son's video calling his crush for 3 hours.
I love you more.
You're saving. Save more when you switch your family's plans to Vodafone. With Vodafone together. Eligible plans from the 30th of October. Credit check and terms apply.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
It's after 10 is the time. A very good morning indeed to you. There's quite a bit around today, you know. There's no immediately obvious, as there has been in recent days, story that absolutely demands all of our attention. But PMQs coming up at 12 could be very, very interesting. It's an extraordinary moment, or not a moment, an extraordinary reflection of that old adage about a week being a long time in politics, isn't it? That Kemi Badenoch, not long ago, was the one whose leadership looked like not surviving, possibly even until the local elections in May, whereas now Keir Starmer's position is or has been in recent days, considerably shakier. And of course, people, well, some people, mostly weirdos, very keen to claim that Badenoch is embarked upon some sort of renaissance. Their polling numbers for a government that is in the doldrums, the idea that His Majesty's opposition would be polling as low as it is in any other circumstances would be catastrophic. But we are not living in normal circumstances, and we haven't been for a decade because of what happened a decade ago. And it is to that that Rachel Reeves will finally turn later today with a speech that is going to point out the bleeding obvious. I don't know whether we're going to file that under better late than never, or whether we're going to roll our eyes in despair at the fact that it's taken 10 years for a senior member of any government to admit that not being in one of the major economic blocks currently dominating commerce on this planet is an act of supreme idiocy. Look forward to that speech later today. It tallies, seeing as the B word is back in the news, it tallies with a speech from a former head of the armed forces, or an intervention at least, explaining the necessity of a European army. While the Epstein files, to knit three outwardly disparate elements together into one unified theme, the Epstein files make it pretty clear that an awful lot of the movement and possibly even the money behind Brexit came from deeply unpleasant and morally corrupt oligarchs who just like to break things because rules limit the amount of money they can make, up to and including Steve Bannon explaining to the paedophile Jeffrey Epstein why Brexit would be brilliant and why he wanted to fill the European Parliament with fascists, because they could be most relied upon not to put any obstacles in the way of them making untold sums of money. Funny that, isn't it? Funny. But not, I'm afraid, funny ha-ha. And it is to Epstein that we turn first this morning. I told you something yesterday, and I haven't, I'm afraid, made much progress with the thing that I was struggling with. And it is a question of how we properly report, reflect, recognize the plight of Jeffrey Epstein and his friends, victims. Still only one man has been jailed for the industrial scale abuse of young women. And it is those young women whose voices seem to me to be almost quietest. And I want today to turn our attention to the King and the royal family and their failure to properly... They kind of did with Andrew what the Labour government has stood accused of doing with Mandelson. And they haven't they? Would you say that was fair? And the King is on the hook effectively for doing what Starmer did and for not moving quickly enough, for not acting robustly enough, for not really doing anything meaningful until their feet had been brought so close to the fire by revelations in the files. They're different times. I don't think the chronology is identical, but I suspect that the sin might be very similar. And, you know, we are still a very deferential nation. Most of us have mostly warm feelings for the King, even if we find the institution of monarchy at various degrees of anachronistic or absurd. But not doing this speaks to the thing I was trying to talk to you about yesterday. I didn't fail to find a way into the conversation, but I'm still not quite sure that we're ready for the phone-in. Because the phone-in is, we don't care enough, do we? We don't care enough about these women who appeared on an advert released during the Super Bowl, the biggest television audience, I think, on the planet, every year, but it's suddenly up there, and the ad spots in the Super Bowl have become almost a cultural phenomenon of their very own. And this advert was released during, it wasn't in the advertising break. It was released while the Super Bowl was on. So, you know, the attempt to kind of piggyback, if you like, the biggest television audience in the world. And it certainly merits your time.
After years of being kept apart, we're standing together.
Standing together.
Because this girl deserves the truth.
Because she deserves the truth.
Because we all deserve the truth.
And you don't know, do you, quite why their struggle for the truth has been so long and so hard, except quite possibly under the heading of people don't care enough. And if you sense a certain reluctance in my voice, it's not the flipping King's fault that these women's stories have not been properly investigated or heard yet. But I think that he is part of the answer to the question of why. And people don't care enough. People just don't care enough. There's a hideous story today about an Afghan asylum seeker being convicted of raping a 12-year-old girl. And you can tell whether someone's racist or not, very simply, by tracking their reaction to that crime and comparing it to their reaction to the Epstein crimes. Should we, for example, be banning all wealthy, rich American men from visiting the United Kingdom because many of them have turned out to be rapists and paedophiles? Should we think long and hard about letting anybody into our country who is rich and white because many of them have turned out to be? You see what the phone-in would be if I was a hideous hypocrite. So those of us who feel equal levels of disgust at child sexual abuse, because we come at it from the survivor's point of view or the victim's point of view, are having another one of those days where you recognise the epic double standards of everybody else. And that feeds into the question of why, doesn't it? Donald Trump is not currently in much trouble politically, and he was in the metaphorical bed with Epstein for 10 years. Keir Starmer's not mentioned in the files at all, and he's had the worst week of his political career. Peter Mandelson stayed in touch with Epstein long after his hideousness had been established in a court, and so did Andrew Windsor. And the king did nothing. But nobody ever does. So a weird thing happens when an institution is threatened. And that weird thing is that almost everybody involved acts to protect the institution. It's not quite as morally corrupt as it initially sounds. Because if you and I were both committed to something or part of something, imagine we were part of the same organisation, and the organisation found itself knee-deep in scandal, what we would do is ask ourselves, how do we stop the scandal reaching our waists or our shoulders or even engulfing us altogether? And that will rarely, this is why what Wes Streeting did yesterday was quite interesting, but we're not talking about that today. Rarely will anybody respond to scandal by looking for more. That's what the investigators and the journalists do. But rarely will anybody on the hook for a scandal respond to it. I mean, the natural reaction. I mean, it takes me back to when I got expelled from school and the school started telling lies about my home life because they wanted the drugs issue that I got expelled for to somehow be removed from the school. So they claimed that it was behaviours that we'd picked up at home, which was absolute rollocks. I never really understood at the time why mum and dad were so upset about that. But an institution moves immediately into self-preservation and self-protection. And that's what the royal family has done. It's not so much what Keir Starmer did, because he didn't have to appoint him. You can, of course, pick your ambassadors. You cannot pick your family, to paraphrase another old adage. And I'm just looking today at some of the coverage. There's a lot here. I'm sorry. It's not quite as laser-focused as my introductions are about once every 10 years. But how much trouble should the king be in for this? How big a scandal is this? This involvement in, what is it even? What are we talking about? Are we talking about a cover-up? Are we talking about self-preservation being prioritised above all else, which everybody does, by the way? And are we looking at something that is of serious significance? I think we are. Sheila Fogarty was on characteristically sparkling form yesterday. Don't go anywhere else for your royal phone-ins, by the way. And she really highlights this as a scandal of epochal significance. Crisis management teams, lawyers, advisors, all of that being brought in, not to protect the women whose voices you just heard, or Virginia Giuffre, or any of Epstein's victims, or any of the trafficked young women and girls that appear in the Epstein files. The palace has dedicated itself until this week to protecting the palace. There it is. Gosh. The palace has dedicated itself until this week. Yesterday's news headlines contained a line about William and his wife expressing concern for the victims. And that was headline news. Hello? Epstein, your uncle's Bezzy was in prison in 2008 for committing crimes that were well publicised. Andrew must be one of the most scrutinised people on the planet when it comes to what British authorities and British security services do know about an individual. You and I could probably go to Pizza Express in Woking without anybody knowing anything about it. But you can't if you're a member of the royal family. There's two phonies here. I'm not sure I can do them both at the same time, but I'm going to try. The first is, how much trouble, how bad is this for the king? 0345 6060 973. The fact that their senior member of that organisation continued to hobnob and fraternise with a paedophile long after his depravity became established. And we know the depth of that hobnobbing, the depth of those associations. It appears that he has been economical with the actuality with regard to that infamous photograph of Virginia Giuffre with him. There is much more filth in these files than was previously known. And although nobody can claim that anybody should have been aware of things they couldn't be aware of, how bad is this? It's not a question I ask you very often. And there's a reason why, is that it paints too big a goal mouth. And the reason I'm asking it today is because it is inextricably linked to the second question I'm about to ask you. And I don't want to ask you this question, but I don't see how I can avoid it. We don't care, do we? Society doesn't care about the victims of these kind of crimes. Elements of society pretends that it cares when they can make racist or political points about some perpetrators. But when wealthy white men abuse young women and girls, I'm putting myself in this category. I think I care, but I clearly don't care enough. Because this is the first time I've conducted a phone-in since this story broke that comes at it entirely from the perspective of the women whose voices you just heard in that short film. So, can you knit that? You can see why they're in the same vista for me. You can see why. I'm not making excuses. I'm not making excuses for the palace. I'm simply observing that they have behaved like almost every institution I can think of would behave. And they've moved to protect themselves. And they can only do that because when push comes to shove, they do not care enough about the victims. And that's why my ears pricked up yesterday. That's why it stuck in my craw yesterday when our news bulletins were led by the news that William and Kate had spoken out in support of the victims or condemned the abusers. I can't even remember what it was because it just felt so weird to me that that would be headline news today or yesterday when the story has been around for a very long time and Epstein's depravity has been established since at least 2008. In the case of Donald Trump, much longer than that, as we'll discover later in the programme. He was speaking to police chiefs about how disgusting Epstein is long before you even knew Epstein's name. So I'm not suggesting for a minute that the palace deserves the benefit of the doubt simply because it's done exactly what everybody else does. But how are we ready to have that? Okay, here's the question. So it's happened sometimes when I'm struggling with a subject. It only pops up at the very end. Why? Why do we look away? Why don't we care more? It's not confined to crimes committed by predominantly Pakistani grooming gangs. Although that's part of the same phenomenon. When those young women come forward expecting, begging to be believed, they're not. And the same is true of the victims of extremely wealthy white men from all walks of life. Why? Why, when young people come forward to report, and it must take an awful lot of courage to do that, why do we as a society so often look the other way, refuse to listen, refuse to... You know, we did phone-ins years ago about the Catholic Church. Would you believe that's how old I am? It's how long I've been doing this. And some of the calls we took at the time have stayed with me forever. And it was when you told your mum what the priest was doing and your mum told you off. This is heavy stuff for 10 o'clock in the morning, 10 o'clock on a Wednesday morning. But that's the point, isn't it? Because that's the beginning of an answer to the question. Why don't we care more? Because I don't want to talk about it, James, and I don't want to think about it. And that's a forgivable, even perhaps a completely natural reaction to the worst kind of behaviour that other human beings commit. I've told my mum what happened, and my mum told me off. My mum made me wash my mouth out with soap and water. I told my mum what happened, what the priest was doing to me. This is me remembering a call from back in the day, and my mum got angry with me. So the palace did it. The palace didn't respond in the way that we all like to pretend we always respond. Oh, my God, an allegation of paedophilia. Break the glass, sound the alarm, stop all the clocks, call the police. Nobody ever does that in schools, in churches, in palaces, in government. An allegation of paedophilia, an association with paedophilia. Stop all the clocks, call the police. No. Crikey, phone the crisis management people. Keep your head down, hope it goes away. And nowhere in any of those calculations and contemplations does the victim or the survivor even appear. Even appear. So, one of the hardest questions I've ever asked you, and please accept my apologies for taking so long to get there. I want you to talk to me about the king, but the central question here, I think, is why? Why don't we do more? Why don't we care more? Why does society almost always edge away from these stories instead of leaning into them, when we often congratulate ourselves on caring more about these issues than we do about almost any other? That's the question. Why do we always, almost always, fail to do what is so obviously right when it comes to behaviour that is so obviously wrong? The palace. Hope it goes away. Try to bury it. Downing Street. Oh, we don't know why. It's not that big a deal. We can send him there. He was only friends with him. And, of course, then you hop over the Atlantic to America, where they're all up to their necks in it, and nobody seems to give a monkey's. Why is that? How can it be that on the rhetorical level, this is the single most disgusting thing that human beings can do, and we are all absolutely outraged and disgusted by it, and we live in constant fear of our children falling into the clutches of a paedophile, in the way that extraordinary caller yesterday came so close to experiencing. And yet when push comes to shove, when the opportunity to do something about it presents itself, we almost always shirk our responsibilities and our duties. And I don't know why. I don't know why. 21 minutes after 10 is the time. We're supposed to care more about this. We're constantly told we care more about this. We constantly claim we care more about this than we do about almost any other crime ever committed. And yet when we have the chance to address the culprits and the perpetrators, we almost always look away. And I don't know why. Do you? 0345 6060 973.
LBC.
At EDF, we don't just encourage you to use less electricity, we actually reward you for it. That's why when you use less during peak times on weekdays, we give you free electricity on Sundays. How you use it is up to you. EDF. Change is in our power. Households who reduce their weekday peak electricity usage by 50% can earn up to 16 hours of free electricity per week. For full details, eligibility and T's and C's, visit edfenergy.com/r-power.
Thanks for a lovely evening. Would you like to come in for a coffee?
Yeah, okay. That'd be lovely.
Oh, gosh, sorry. I didn't mean... I just wanted you to see my new Wickes kitchen. It's just been installed.
At Wickes, our experts will support you every step of the way, from a free kitchen design service through to a professional installation. Plus, right now, find big savings in the Wickes kitchen sale. Book a free design appointment and feel as proud as a peacock with Wickes. Terms apply.
Listeners, we interrupt the airwaves to share an incredible discovery. The reason why Britain hasn't been so great of late is because the country hasn't been eating enough Weetabix. We must get to work in rebuilding Great Britain, Bix by Bix. By delivering Weetabix to whoever plans the traffic diversions. To delivery drivers who can't seem to find your house.
And people who don't stack the dishwasher properly.
To Britain, we must say, have you had your Weetabix?
Donations to British Heart Foundation fund scientific research that can help save lives. People like Joe, who's pitching his next big business plan. Maria, who's sending out her wedding invitations, and Jack, who's just being a teenager again. Because when you donate, you fund more than just science. You help save lives. British Heart Foundation funds research that aims to cure inherited heart muscle diseases. But our work is not done. Donate now at bhf.org.uk and keep us beating.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
24 minutes after 10 is the time. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. And the question is one of the ugliest I'll ever ask you, with a slight side order of Buckingham Palace. How bad is this for them, given that we spent a week talking about Keir Starmer's failure to banish Peter Mandelson to the outer reaches of civilization as a consequence of his associations with Jeffrey Epstein continuing long after Epstein was convicted of his original crimes? King Charles is just as culpable. And I wonder whether he should be in just as much, if not more, trouble. But the other question that popped up during my pontifications was somewhat rhetorical, wasn't it? Why don't we care more? Why don't we care more? Why don't we do more? Eileen is in Hamilton. Eileen, what would you like to say?
Hi, James. I think this is terrible for the King, from the point of view they've known about it for so long. Mm. The question of £12 million, Charles will know what all of that is about, and if he doesn't, that's complete delusion.
This is, I mean, you're right to raise that. Sorry, carry on. I've said quite enough already.
No, I was just going to say also, he's been responsible for putting up his brother, almost being his keeper. That I can't think what's worse, the fact that he's responsible for putting up his brother, but not pressing him to give evidence under oath. So I think that puts the King's hands all over it. It puts the Queen in a precarious position because of her charity work. And worse, I feel that what's actually worse is that he's in a worse position than Keir Starmer, because he's known about it for all those years. Mm. And if the police and security services were all over Mandelson's properties, why haven't they treated the King's brother the same? I can't even bring myself to say that man's name.
Well, I can answer that, in that he's not suspected at the moment. Well, actually, he is, isn't he? Crikey.
Yeah.
Sharing sensitive information with a paedophile. I don't know if it would count as state secrets. It wouldn't count as state secrets or government business. So there might be a nuance there, but that's the allegation with Mandelson, is that he shared sensitive information he only had access to because he was in government or very close to government, whereas Andrew is sharing allegedly reports or on visits that he's undertaken. I mean, why he's sharing it with Epstein is anybody's guess, except that obviously there was some sense that Epstein would somehow benefit from it. So yes, the idea that I think you were on the line before I reached the end of my endless monologue this morning, so you don't have to answer the next question. But it's just true, isn't it, that what you've described is an act in crisis management and crossing your fingers and hoping it goes away. It's
crisis
not
crisis management over care for the victims.
Yes, yes, always.
Commercial.
Always.
Paranoia, not want to be cancelled by his subjects, when in fact, if he cared so much about the victims, the way that his wife appears to with her charity work.
Yes.
He wouldn't have waited all this time, and Prince William as well. They would have been out saying, prove you're innocent, give evidence under oath, get in front of the committees in America, show Virginia that you are innocent, if you are, and I don't think he is.
How are we being unfair? Only in the sense that we're expecting them or him to behave in a way that nobody else has ever behaved. Because what happens in these moments, what happens, I think, in the room where it happens, is that everybody's sitting around a table asking one question and one question only, which is, how do we make this go away, or how do we get through this? To which the answer is never going to be, make the scandal bigger. Which is what we're expecting and asking them to do.
When this first came to light, they should have ripped the plaster off and dealt with it as our monarchy. In that case, they might have saved that poor girl, Virginia. If she was listened to earlier, she might not have went down that route she did. And I think that's so upsetting.
Who knows? Yeah. And the question of why we don't care enough? Is it, I mean, the obvious answer that we're both providing is pretty simply that because so much effort goes immediately into crisis management, investigation and victim care or survivor care gets pushed out of the...
Absolutely.
Off the agenda entirely. I don't want to say I like that.
The firm see victims with less commercial
value. But what about the rest of us? What about the rest of us?
Well,
what can we do?
All of us could be subject to it. You just need to be in the wrong place at the wrong time. And there will be people listening just now, James, who haven't reported incidents.
Of course they will.
Whether it be against their boss, someone more powerful. Sorry, I work in a school.
That's quite good, Lord.
And I'm really passionate about it.
I was going to say, you need to take that budgie to the vets. Eileen, I can see why you're very passionate about it. Rather, I could hear your passion before you contextualised it in the most obvious way. To clarify one thing, Thames Valley Police is assessing a complaint by an anti-monarchy group over the alleged sharing of confidential material by Andrew Windsor. The only reason I had a wry chuckle there was because one of the things I didn't mention in my introduction was the difficulty of knowing whether our opinions on stories like this are informed by our previous opinion about the royal family. So if you're a diehard monarchist, and I say to you, how big a problem is this? You're going to say, not that big at all. And if you're a diehard Republican and I say, how big a problem is this? You're going to say, huge. But the rest of us in the margins, or in the middle rather, don't have particularly strong feelings either way regarding monarchy or republicanism. How big a deal is this? And Eileen's first out of the blocks this morning with a pretty simple answer, huge. And it does, doesn't it? I'm not going mad. It speaks directly to that second question, that hideous, that horrible question of why we don't care more. Why we don't care enough. Dominic Ellis is here with the headlines.
Canada's Prime Minister Mark Carney has cancelled a trip to Germany after a mass shooting in British Columbia. At least 9 people were killed at a school and a nearby home in the small town of Tumbler Ridge. Sir Keir Starmer is preparing for Prime Minister's questions later after fighting back against pressure to quit. He's promised he won't walk away from his mandate and is hit out at infighting within the Labour Party. And Tottenham Hotspur have sacked manager Thomas Frank after just 8 months in charge. Spurs are 16th in the Premier League and just 5 points above the relegation zone. LBC weather, largely cloudy with outbreaks of rain through today. The best of any sunny spells in the south, a high of 13 degrees.
This is LBC.
At TfL, we're opening up more of London for everyone with step-free access. We're continuing to improve accessibility at many of our stations, and now over 200 stations and counting have step-free access, including the entire Elizabeth Line, DLR and all tram stops. That is how we're making the greener way to travel more accessible to all. Search TfL Improvement Plan. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters. Greener than total estimated petrol and diesel car emissions.
Looking for a fixed passive income backed by real demand? With ulezprosperity.com, you buy the car, we rent it from you for a set period. You stay the legal owner and we pay you up to £600 per month in fixed rental income. No hassle, no maintenance, no tenants. It's a straightforward asset-backed rental agreement. Visit ulezprosperity.com for conditions and to learn more. That's ulezprosperity.com. Simple, steady, secure.
Attention dogs, this is not a drill. If your dinner comes in dodgy brown balls or smells suspicious, at best, you deserve to know this. Butternut Box makes fresh dog food with ingredients you'd find in your human's fridge. In fact, some humans have even tasted it. For quality control, obviously. Anyway, let's hope your human was listening. Butternut Box, fresh food, happy dogs. Try Butternut Box today and get 25% off your first 2 boxes. Offer available online in the UK and Ireland to first-time customers only.
You know that guy I've been seeing?
Yeah.
Turns out my sister's been seeing him too.
Oh, really?
And I heard he's been seeing Kelly at number 56. And Dave.
Your brother?
Yep.
Specsavers opticians and audiologists own and run their stores, so your care is their business, which can make them rather popular.
I've got something to tell you. I've got half an hour with him this afternoon.
Specsavers. Your care is our business. Book an appointment today.
Shine Night Walk London is a 10K, half marathon or full marathon supported walk around the city at night on the 19th of September to raise vital money for Cancer Research UK. It's also...
everyone walking with all their colours, twinkling away.
You can actually see how nice London is. And London is different at night time.
Celebration of life.
And it gives hope.
Step towards a brighter future at shinewalk.org today to get 30% off your entry. Together, we are beating cancer. T's and C's apply.
This is LBC with James O'Brien. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
10:34 is the time. Better late than never, or pitifully, pitifully poor. Royal family finally address it. I mean, it's been done incrementally anyway. I think King Charles is a good man, and I think that his office is run impeccably, actually. I think that the early years of his monarchy have gone about as well as anybody could have expected, but you don't doff your cap or tug your forelock on a morning like this. You're looking at what the machine, what the firm, as they call themselves, did with regard to the paedophile's friend in their midst. And it feels very different already, doesn't it, to the conversation that everybody's been having about what Keir Starmer did with regard to the paedophile's friend in their midst. Keir Starmer almost lost his job over it. Nobody's suggesting for a minute that the king is going to have to abdicate. And I don't fully understand why. So that's the angle. That's the way into the story today, is through Buckingham Palace. Keir Starmer almost lost his job over not acting robustly enough with regard to the paedophile's friend in his circle. And King Charles is not facing any real problems at all at the moment with regards to not acting robustly enough with regards to the paedophile's friend in his family and in his business, his firm, his organ. So, I mean, that is probably just deference, is it? Is that just forelock tugging? I don't know. You can answer that question. But in response to the question of why we don't, because even the Mandelson story didn't kick on for Starmer until the revelations regarding the alleged sharing of sensitive information kicked in. Being friends with a paedophile wasn't enough. And that means that the survivors of abuse aren't enough. They're less important than financial secret sharing. They're less important. That's awful, isn't it? That's awful. I've got a racist and an idiot for you in my inbox this morning, if you're interested, just to lighten the tone. Here's the racist. Can we have exactly the same phone-in on the proliferation of Asian grooming gangs? Writes a racist, because we've been having those phone-ins since 2011, mate. I mean, you could be forgiven for not listening, but you couldn't be forgiven for not hearing me reference the similarities between these two phenomena just 20 minutes ago. But you only care when they're brown, you see? You don't care when they're white. Which makes you both a racist and a paedophile apologist, which is an extraordinary thing to have chalked up on your CV by 10:36 on a Wednesday morning. And I also have an idiot for you, who doesn't realise that I can see the history of their messages. So I'll read what they had to say about Keir Starmer finding himself in this position, and then what he had to say about King Charles finding himself in this position, without knowing that I'd be able to see both of them when they messaged me to say, is your middle name Hindsight? So stand by for Robin Maidenhead's arrival in Idiot's Corner in about 5 minutes' time. Before that, much more importantly, why? Why do we look away? Why don't we care more? Why don't we ever really see our actions living up to our words or our rhetoric? And, you know, to go back to our racist friend with the grooming gangs, when Kemi Badenoch tried to make great political capital out of it earlier this year, she completely ignored, or beg your pardon, last year, the fact that her own government had commissioned Alexis Jay, who I saw the other night at the Houses of Parliament, to investigate child sexual abuse across countless categories. My own school is mentioned. It has its own flipping file in the Child Sexual Abuse Inquiry report. My school has its own file. Church, institutions, sport, everywhere. But you only really find a certain kind of politician expressing concern when the perpetrators are from a certain background or a certain ethnicity. There's a word for that, of course. It's racist. Very simply. And then, of course, what they do is, they call us racist for caring. They say, no, we call you racist for not caring about all the other victims, for not caring about the boys at my school, for not caring about the victims of priests, for not caring this week about the victims of rich white men. And why? Why don't we care? We constantly say that we do. Why don't we? Tanya's in Reading. Tanya, what would you like to say?
Hi, James. Hello, sorry, very, very nervous because I've never done anything like this before.
Take your time.
But very quickly, my story is I was sexually abused from a family friend from 4 till I was 10.
I'm so
sorry. Not really realising what was wrong, what was happening to me, and threats, the usual thing that happens with these types of people.
Yes.
When I was early 20s, I decided to actually come out and tell people, because it was affecting my life so badly, I had to sort of say something. And I did, and wasn't believed.
By whom?
By my father, by the person's wife that...
I'm so sorry.
By a doctor, by everything. I mean, I went to a doctor and the first thing they said is, well, what do you want me to do about it? You know, and that was... When you've had something hidden in you for so long that's so bad, to not be believed is sort of the worst thing possible. And you're saying to me about the king, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
And if you go back to people that have happened, that this has happened to, i.e. myself, what you want is ownership. You don't want any money. You don't want anything like that. You want that person to own up that that's what he did to you, so people know. And I think what misses... a lot with these sorts of things, of any sexual abuse as a young person,
yeah,
is that, yes, you're right, the person goes on for the rest of their life as a victim, and, you know, it completely messes with their head. I think about it every day. I'm not a screwed up person, but, you know, that's how you deal with it.
Did anybody believe you?
My partner at the time did.
Okay.
Yeah, my partner at the time did. But as I say, if you ask the victims of all what's gone on with the Epstein thing, I would say a majority of them would say, I just want it to be, yeah, this is actually what happened.
Yeah.
And I want them to own up to it. And I think with the king, he's obviously got a brother, and forgive me for saying it, who must be a prolific liar. And he obviously can't get to the bottom of it. But I feel that.
Forgive me. This is a cheeky question. Will you let me ask you a cheeky question?
Yeah, of course.
Would you have mounted the same defence of Keir Starmer last week? Because Peter Mandelson is also a prolific liar.
He is a prolific liar, but, I mean, I'm not particularly a supporter of Starmer.
No, sure.
But I like him as a person, actually.
Yes.
I don't think he's a bad person. I think actually quite a nice guy. I think he's probably in a job that is a bit too much for him.
we veered off, haven't we? But you're right.
Yeah.
I'm just pointing out
what
that...
What I'm saying is, I think it's gone... We've gone way too much to blame Starmer because it's easy.
Yeah.
It's easy to blame him because we can get an instant result,
yeah,
or more or less an instant result. But when you're dealing with people of a higher profile, and the person that abused me was of a higher profile, it's worse for the victim because you don't get believed because, like, going back to the gentleman you said about earlier, when you started about him not being washing his mouth out and all that type of terrible things, because I don't think people can deal with it.
It compounds. I don't know if you... First of all, I'm so sorry for what you've been through.
Right?
Twice. for going through the abuse and then for having the abuse compounded by the scepticism of people that you should have been able to trust and rely on. I can only imagine how awful that is. And I'm glad to hear you're doing so well.
Mm-hmm.
Did you hear a call we took last week or the week before from Margaret in Catterick, who's stumbled across images of child sexual abuse on her then-husband's computer?
Gosh, no, I didn't. No.
She was an extraordinary woman, and she made me afterwards not feel ashamed, but feel somewhat enlightened by my initial reaction in that moment, because she went straight to the authorities. She didn't give him the opportunity to make excuses. She didn't entertain the possibility that it had happened somehow by accident or someone had interfered with his hard disk. She is a magnificent woman. We've spoken to her twice.
Wow,
But how many people would do that, Tanya? Because
they wouldn't.
No, because what she discovered was a hand grenade in the middle of her life.
Mm-hmm.
And she pulled the pin.
It is, and I think, unfortunately, again, in my experience, women are almost as bad, because I was then threatened by her because I was making up lies.
Because you were going to pull a pin. You were going to pull a pin in the middle of her life. And they just keep the pin in. That's what the king said. Keep the pin in. Whether he said it in such terms or not, I don't know. But that's what everybody does, whether they're running a church, whether it's the Archbishop of Canterbury or the headmaster of a school or the chief, you know, scoutmaster or whatever it is. Keep the pin in. Call the crisis management people. Keep the pin in. There's an ineluctable logic to that, but there's no morality at all.
No, there isn't. And it just feels that, and you say it quite often, and I always, every day, when you talk about this sort of thing, I'm in tears, because go back to the victim.
Yes.
No, it's about the victim as such.
Always.
There's so many of us around.
There are.
And it's like the person that's the abuser is more important in whatever way that might be than the person that's been abused.
I guess that, and that's, you know, Part of the profile problem, isn't it? I mean, if you're a bit racist, you're going to pretend to be outraged by the actions of brown perpetrators. If you're a bit deferential, you're going to be excusing the actions of privileged perpetrators. And the bigger the perpetrator, the bigger their profile, the bigger their status, the bigger the pin. The more, you know, the more ramifications there will be for blowing that whistle, for pulling that pin. Thank you, Tanya. I'm sorry that you we're in a position to make this call. I think you know what I mean by that, but thank you for your courage, actually. 10:45 is the time, and as often happens, well, as always happens when we address these kind of issues, a lot of people offering their love and support for you, Tanya, but also sharing similar experiences and echoing precisely what you say about the thing of not being believed. Not being believed. I should mention that the Samaritans are available for anybody affected by any of the issues we're discussing, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. You can find them online, or you can call them on 116-123. Should probably mention that the bloke whose lies saw all sorts of coverage and ramifications got released from jail this week, Carl Beach, called a fantasist, although that word is a little bit inadequate, and he, of course, was believed. He came along shortly after the grooming gang scandals had gathered momentum, shortly after Jimmy Savile's story, shortly after my school friends had stepped forward to be abused. And a lot of people, including the Metropolitan Police, including an awful lot of journalists, myself among them, the Daily Mail was boasting at the time about how when the Metropolitan Police described his allegations as credible and true, it was a victory for them. It was a victory for the truth and months of hard work. How quickly we forget. But I worry sometimes that part of the reason why some people use him as an example more than they ever talk about actual victims of actual abuse is part of the keeping the pin in. So if someone comes forward and he's believed and he turns out to be a liar, if you're dedicated to keeping the pin in the grenade, you're going to want people to talk about him a hell of a lot more than they talk about Virginia Giuffre, for example, or a hell of a lot more than they talk about the victims of any paedophilic abuse, whether it's happening in takeaway restaurants in Rotherham or whether it's happening on private islands owned by billionaires and visited by some of the richest and most privileged people on the planet. Keep the pin in the grenade.
Tom Swarbrick on LBC.
Labour's leader in Scotland tells him to go, yet Keir Starmer comes out fighting.
I will never walk away from the mandate I was given to change this country.
The Cabinet falls in line behind the Prime Minister, but how long can he hang on?
We've got a country to run, and the last thing we need right now is all this speculation looking inwards.
I'll be joined exclusively by the Deputy Leader of the Labour Party, Lucy Powell, this afternoon from 4.
Tom Swarbrick, Monday to Friday from 4 p.m. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
To be or not to be.
Right now we're offering a range of incentives across Audi models.
That is the...
But only until the 28th of February.
The,
So stop whatever you're doing.
I'll be right back. Just carry on without me.
And find yours online or at your local Audi centre. Audi. Vorsprung durch Technik. Terms and conditions apply. Selected models, retail customers and participating Audi centres only.
At Ocado, you'll save 25% on your first shop and get free delivery. Which means if you were to buy a four-cheese pizza, you'd basically be getting one of the cheeses for free. Save and splurge at Ocado, the online supermarket. Geographical and other restrictions. Minimum spend £60 and charges apply. New customers only. Maximum saving £20. Terms at Ocado.com.
When you're smiling.
Banning Dental Group Clinics. With over 5,000 top-rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
Shine Night Walk London is a 10K, half marathon or full marathon supported walk around the city at night on the 19th of September to raise vital money for Cancer Research UK. It's also...
everyone walking with all their colours, twinkling away.
You can actually see how nice London is. And London is different at night time.
Celebration of life, and it gives hope.
Step towards a brighter future at shinewalk.org today to get 30% off your entry. Together, we are beating cancer. T's and C's apply.
I'm Leah, and this is my NHS story. I could just feel my body didn't feel right, and my GP referred me to CDC. Had some blood tests done, and within 24 hours, I had my results. And that just reassured me that I was being taken seriously.
The government is opening new community diagnostic centres, with many already available 12 hours a day, 7 days a week, so the NHS can be there for all of us when we need it. Find your closest one at gov.uk/NHS Fit for the Future. Available England-wide.
You look really nice tonight. Not that you don't look nice normally, it's just I can tell you've made an effort. Not that you look scruffy the rest of the
time. When words fail, there's our number one Valentine's dine-in for £25. With options including succulent scallops and king prawns with roasted garlic butter, tender sirloin with triple cooked fries, and creamy ruby and raspberry mousse, all from our number one range, plus a crisp bottle of Prosecco. Waitrose, the home of food lovers.
Selected lines and stores subject to availability. Offer ends 15th of Feb. Please drink responsibly. Non-alcoholic drinks also available.
James O'Brien on LBC.
It does. You're right, Christine. It takes so much courage to phone in about such traumatic events. Love to Tina, indeed. Let me do some housework before we carry on with this conversation. There's a lot to get through today. We've done something quite weird. We stumbled into... Henry O'Reilly and I are always stumbling into things by accident. We stumbled in to the curious relationship between erotic novelists and Reform UK councillors. We stumbled into all sorts of things together over the years. And we stumbled into something entirely accidentally this week. We've stumbled into what would happen if Nigel Farage's party was treated by the UK media in the same way that the Labour Party is. And we had four stories on Monday that would be absolutely huge if it was happening in the Labour Party. And we had four stories yesterday. Four more stories. That adds up to eight, Keith. Eight stories so far this week. Possibly nine. I may have had five yesterday. And so I thought, well, we've shot that bolt now. That's the end of that feature. I think we've got four more. So I don't know what we're going to call it. We call it the Farage Files or something like that. What would happen if a radio program, if a member of the UK media spent a week treating Farage's shower with the same level of scrutiny that the Daily Mail treats the Labour Party? Is that a good way of putting it? What would happen if Farage was actually properly scrutinised? If his party was properly reported and investigated? And we're finding out this week. We could hit 12, possibly lucky 13 stories, all about the same political party and all negative. So tune in to Henry Reilly and the Farage Files at 11:30 today. And then PMQs, of course, with Natasha. And then, here's a story you possibly might be able to help me with moving forward. Don't you hate that phrase? Moving forward. It's completely redundant. And you never move backwards, do you? And you may be able to help me with a story that I'm covering yesterday. Moving forward, you may be able to help me with a story that I'm covering in the future, therefore move... Anyway, sorry, pet hate. Call me out, will you, Keith, if I ever say moving forward again. I think that there are more cases than are currently being reported of people being refused entry into the United States of America for no apparent reason. Financial Times on its front page yesterday had a story about people turning up at the embassy for what they thought was a formality, people who have actually got lives in the United States of America, but because of minor indiscretions or crimes on their record, they were for the first time ever being refused entry. And I have two stories from my personal life, which I can't talk to because they want desperately to get home to the United States of America. But I'm aware of two people who don't have, or at least who assure me that they don't have any criminal record whatsoever. And I've got no reason to doubt them because I don't know them from that period of my life. I know them from the other periods of my life. who have actually just turned up at the embassy expecting a rubber stamping and being told no, sorry. And I don't know how we're going to do it. I mean, you could email me probably, james@lbc.co.uk. Does anyone ever look at that email account? Do you ever look at it? james@lbc.co.uk. Well, should we use that one? We can't set up another email account and then forget all about it. But if you are in that, if it's you, I don't want second or third hand stories. I've got them already. If you are in that zone, if you have been refused entry into the United States of America despite living there or having worked and paid taxes there without any trouble whatsoever in the recent past, then just email james@lbc.co.uk and have a look at contributing to a broader report on it. There may be nothing there. You know, my news antennae, they're rubbish. But you never know. And at 12:30, we'll be speaking to an Irish, or the lawyer, rather, for an Irish fella who has been in detention as a consequence of ICE for 5 months, despite not having done anything wrong, up to and including immigration offences. 5 months. It's Kafkaesque. There's another overused word, but not on this occasion. It's completely accurate. And the editor of the Daily Mail, the man whose columnist hounded Lucy Meadows to an early grave, or at least that's one interpretation of events that a coroner referred to when her inquest was conducted with regards to what Dick Littlejohn, the Daily Mail columnist, had written about her. The man responsible for attacking our independent judiciary with the enemies of the people headline. He's in court at the moment complaining about being deeply hurt about things. The man who, of course, greenlit, indeed commissioned the attack upon Ed Miliband's dead father, the war hero Ralph Miliband, described as the man who hates Britain. The man who painted targets on the back of countless MPs by calling them saboteurs and sticking Crush the Saboteurs on the front page of the Daily Mail is in the High Court at the moment asking for sympathy. Sorry. He's in the High Court at the moment asking for sympathy and complaining about being deeply hurt by something some people have said about him. We'll be catching up with events in the High Court where that case continues in the next hour of the programme as well. 10:55 is the time. Maggie is in Southampton. Maggie, back to the rather more serious matter in hand. What would you like to say?
Hello, James.
Hello, Maggie.
I mean, basically, it goes back to patriarchy, and that's a very glib thing to say. But when I think back to my time in the 60s, when I was growing up as a young woman, as an adolescent, we were basically told, the message was, you're either a good woman or you're a bad woman. You can be one or the other. And a good woman didn't have sex outside marriage, but a bad woman would have sex with anyone. And the roots of that in our Christian culture are, you're either the Virgin Mary or you're Mary Magdalene. And it's one or the other. And that has hung on.
Even now, I mean, I went to a monastic school. I was raised by, my sex education came from men in dresses who'd taken a vow of celibacy. So I'm fairly well versed in the hypocrisy of religious doctrines on this front. But we're victim blaming effectively in these sort of cases. We're just thinking, well, there's no smoke without fire. High Court judges in our lifetime would question the length of a rape victim's skirt as a possible incitement to sexual assault, and we saw it with the grooming gangs in the northern and midland cities. The idea that they are not actually victims; they are complicit in their own abuse.
They're temptresses.
Temptresses,
because their sexuality is obvious, and once a woman or a girl of 12 or 9 or whatever it is has had sex, she falls into that category. And I speak advisedly because I'm a retired psychotherapist and also a retired probation officer.
Right.
So I've seen it from both sides. I've worked with perpetrators and survivors. And, you know, that hasn't gone away. Apart from amazing times of feminism, it feels like it's going backwards now.
Well, all the isms do, don't they? I was recording a full disclosure with Sadiq Khan yesterday, and we were talking about how it feels as if progress on race relations and racism is going backwards. Sexism,
absolutely,
misogyny and racism are always hand in hand, aren't they, historically and
aren't
culturally?
They? Yeah.
And when Trump boasts about grabbing women by the vagina, and doesn't suffer any particular punishment for that, and people like Nigel Farage come out to defend him and sort of snigger that it was just locker room talk, they're proving your point quite perfectly.
Absolutely. And the more power and
they
the
let
more
you
money
do it.
A
they
man
let you
has.
Do it. Yeah. And that's why we look away. That's why we move along. That's why we want to keep the pin in. So that's part of it. Keep the pin in the grenade. The other part of it is we literally don't care enough about the survivors and the victims because we don't care about the survivors and the victims.
And I think a lot of that comes from fear of female sexuality. Because if you can keep women locked in their box, whether it's marriage or being pure or whatever it is,
yeah.
You don't have to worry that they have their desires as well.
Do you know what I use? I mean, you're obviously on the money and you're speaking with a much wider breadth of knowledge than I have. But I remember dealing with low-level misogyny when I was younger. And there was often a resentment. You get it really blew up later, actually, with so-called incels, the sort of involuntary celibacy movement, which is very far-right adjacent and therefore actually also goes hand-in-hand often with racism. But the this fury that a man can only ever have sex if a woman decides to, quotes, let him, end quotes, that turns into a hatred of women because they're not having any sex. And that's why you want to subjugate a woman. You want to go back to the days when it was not a crime. The crime of raping your wife did not exist. In our, you know this, but a lot of people listening may not.
Until the 1990s, would you believe?
Yeah, 20 years into my lifetime, 20-odd years into my lifetime, you could not actually face criminal sanction for raping a wife because it was philosophically impossible under British jurisprudence to be. And you see it in the tradwife movement in America. And I don't know if you saw... here's a phrase that sums up everything you're talking about. Woody Allen's wife and stepdaughter, which isn't a riddle. It's the same person. Her apparent or alleged communications with Jeffrey Epstein, talking about another man who'd, I don't know what phrase to use, I nearly said got into trouble with a 15-year-old girl, but that's the language of patriarchy, isn't it? A man who was accused of abusing a 15-year-old girl, and in this email she was expressing how angry she was with the 15-year-old girl for tempting him.
And Andrew's ex-girlfriend who said that anybody who wasn't in the Epstein files was a loser.
It's on Tom's show. I don't know if I saw that clip, actually. I don't know if he ever went out with Lady Victoria Harvey, who clearly has issues all of her own, but
well,
yes.
She's described as an ex-girlfriend.
Is she? Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah. No, fair enough. That's me being the world's worst gossip columnist because I was on duty at the time of that relationship, I think. But yeah, you're right. I mean, you can't uphold the patriarchy without the support of women you could generously describe as victims of it or gaslit victims of it or just, Ghislaine Maxwell, most obviously, completely complicit members of it and contributors to it. I don't understand that any more than you do, Maggie, but I suspect your understanding probably goes further than mine. It is 1 minute after 11. You are listening to James O'Brien on LBC.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom, officials in Canada are investigating one of the country's deadliest mass shootings ever. At least 9 people were killed at a school and a nearby home in Tumbler Ridge. Few details are known about the suspect, who is also dead. More than 25 people are injured. Keir Starmer is preparing for Prime Minister's questions this lunchtime after fighting back against pressure to quit. He's promised he won't walk away from his mandate and has hit out at infighting within the Labour Party. There are fresh reports the Health Secretary Wes Streeting is considering a leadership challenge, but the Government Minister George Gould has told LBC the Cabinet is unified and focused.
Wes is a brilliant Health Secretary. He's focused on getting waiting times down. And on Monday night, the Prime Minister spoke to the Parliamentary Labour Party. And there was overwhelming unity in that room. And the very strong message from everyone was that the public do not want us to turn in on ourselves, focus on our internal politics. They want us to get on with the big challenges we face.
A report found anti-Semitism in the UK spiked in the aftermath of the Manchester synagogue terror attack. A monitoring group recorded dozens of cases on the day and the day after last October's attack. Dave Rich is from the Community Security Trust.
There was a huge outpouring of sympathy for the Jewish community from across the country. And yet there's this small minority of people who are so gripped by hatred that they saw the Jewish people had been killed in a synagogue and they were actually excited by it, or they didn't want to believe it, or they wanted to use it as an opportunity to express even more hatred of Jewish people.
A man arrested over the disappearance of American news presenter Savannah Guthrie's mother has been released. Nancy Guthrie, who's 84, is believed to have been kidnapped from her home in Arizona 11 days ago. And Tottenham has sacked their manager, Thomas Frank, after just 8 months in charge. Spurs are 16th in the Premier League and just 5 points above the relegation zone. In the City, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 46 at 10,400. The pound buys $1.37 and a euro 14. LBC weather largely cloudy with outbreaks of rain through today. The best of any sunny spells in the south with a high of 13 degrees. From Global's newsroom, for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
When the days are cold and dark, we Swedes don't let the weather dampen our spirits. We make it as comfortable as possible. We light candles, settle into the sofa with a fika, sheltered from the world outside. We can't offer you a cozy Swedish log cabin, but we can give you the next best thing. Visit the Volvo new car event between 18th of February and the 11th of March for event offers on selected new cars across the Volvo range. Thoughtfully designed and shaped by the Swedish way of life, giving you that inviting feeling all year round. Order online at volvocars.com or book an appointment at your local Volvo retailer.
Offers vary by model and apply to model year 26. Retail customers only, subject to availability, terms apply.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
Five minutes after 11 is the time. Look, this is how deference works. And I think today it qualifies you for entry into Idiot's Corner. So when we are, as we have been today, talking about the King's abject failure to do enough to rein in his brother Andrew's relationship with Jeffrey Epstein long after Epstein was established as a paedophile and criminal. Remember, it was only in March of 2022 that they gave £12 million to a woman alleging that he had raped her. A decision taken largely to keep the case out of court. And there's no earthly way that Charles would not have been absolutely party to that process or that decision. By then, he was effectively running what they called the firm. Think of him as the CEO of the firm, while the Queen was the sort of emeritus chairman or chairman of the business. So everything would filter up to her ultimately, but the day-to-day running of the royal family was being done by King Charles. And even if it wasn't, he didn't try to stop it. He didn't do it. Anyway, when we're talking about Keir Starmer not doing enough to stop Peter Mandelson, Robin Maidenhead writes, this is from last Friday, "Isn't it enough that he failed to foresee and avert the development of a scandal whilst having the means to do so? Question mark. When you're talking about the King behaving arguably much worse for, well, not even arguably, much worse for much longer with regard to his family member, Rob takes a rather different view. When most of the King's brothers' awful things were done, they were just the Prince of Wales and the Duke of York. Andrew was an independent man, not under the supervision of Charles. The timing of the now King's actions followed a natural and acceptable course." Doff cap, tug forelock. So you take patriarchy, which is obviously the biggest answer to the question that I'm asking, a horrible analysis, but absolutely irrefutable, that we heard just before the news. You see it in the grooming gangs, populated by predominantly men of Pakistani heritage. You see it in the sexual abuse visited upon Jeffrey Epstein and his friends and colleagues' victims. You see it everywhere you go. You see it in high courts when the length of miniskirts was cited by judges as a possible reason why a woman had been raped because she was asking for it. Everywhere you go, you've got this quasi-religious. In fact, I can tell you precisely zero surprises. The woman that the last caller was just referring to as the ex-girlfriend of Prince Andrew, who told Tom Swarbrick on LBC last week that if you weren't in the Epstein files, you were a loser. No prizes for guessing which political figure she currently supports. All right, well, no prizes for guessing, but I might actually introduce a little bit of tension. No, of course not. It's Nigel Farage, the bloke who thinks it's fine to go around grabbing women by their private parts, or at least it's fine to boast about it. As we've said a million times on this programme, misogyny and racism are, if not twins, then certainly very, very close cousins. So you've got the patriarchy at the heart of it, and the blaming, the demonisation, the othering of women. But loads of us don't feel that we're part of that problem, and we don't really do enough either. Have we all been gaslit covering these stories, the Fleet Street waking up to the gravity of the situation regarding Starmer and Mandelson only when financial information was brought into the mix. It wasn't quite enough. Well, it was nowhere near enough. Keir Starmer, a man who has dedicated much of his career to pursuing abusers of women and girls, not sufficiently disturbed by Mandelson's continuing friendship with a paedophile to have excluded him from the possibility of becoming ambassador. But we're not disturbed in... That's a different question, isn't it? Why don't we care more? Answer that question and tell me what the question to this... What the answer to this slightly different question is. Why aren't we more disturbed by these... Why wasn't Keir Starmer more disturbed by Mandelson's friendship with Epstein? Why weren't you? Why wasn't King Charles more disturbed? Disturbed to the point of doing something that might have been damaging to the brand of breaking ranks and saying no. No, we're not paying £12 million. You will go to court and face these accusations. No. We're not disturbed enough by it. Are we? I don't know why. I'd like to think I was. I'd like to think I am disturbed enough by it, but I can't be, can I? Otherwise, we'd have talked about it sooner. Wouldn't we? Would we? Alice is in Peterborough. Alice, what would you like to say?
Oh, good morning, James.
Hello, Alice.
Hello. Oh, I'm very nervous all of a sudden, sorry.
It's only me.
Yeah, that's why I'm nervous.
Take your time.
So I suppose, for me, we don't care and we're not disturbed because it makes us uncomfortable. We hear these women and their stories, me being one of them, sadly.
I'm sorry.
That's okay. And it makes us very uncomfortable. So I was sexually assaulted in the military, another big patriarchal institution.
God, they don't come much bigger, do they, really?
No. And people don't want to hear it. They do not want to hear about what happened to me and that it even happened, because it shakes their foundations of their beliefs of tradition in this country, of what is going on behind those barbed wire fences. They don't want to hear that it could be that, because it's so gross. And I think it's that. I think it's because it makes people uncomfortable.
So you've got, and this feels... I don't know whether it feels inappropriate or more appropriate as a context of the military, but you've got the keep the pin in element of it, don't you?
Yeah.
Because this would blow up loads of people who had nothing to do with the actual act of abuse.
Of course, the
ripples go far. But you've also got the corollary of disgust, which is, I don't want to look at it. I am disgusted, but I'd rather not look at it. I'm not making excuses for the mothers who told their sons to shut up when they revealed that they were being abused by priests, but it's more than just keeping the pin in it. It's also protecting yourself from horrible feelings, which is probably a natural response. It's why Margaret Incaterick, I don't know if you heard her call, is such an extraordinary woman, because the minute she found these images on her then husband's computer, she just yanked the pin.
The dinner party lady, yeah.
That's the dinner party lady. I've got a feeling she might quite like that, actually, as a label. But that most of us probably wouldn't do that, would we, when presented with...
No. And in my experience, you know, even very close family members, we have never spoken about it because they can't accept that this horrible thing happened somewhere that should be so revered and seen as a good thing in our society, and the military protect us. They don't hurt their own citizens. They don't hurt each other.
And the royal family are supposed to be the best of us, or if they are scumbags, then it makes an entire mockery of all of our social mores and hierarchies, doesn't it? If you've got a scumbag very, very near the very top, what does it say about our entire society? So shut up, close the door, pay her off and move away.
Yeah, but I think people are disgusted. I think people do care. They just can't do it openly. They have to shut the door.
It's, I mean, not to labour the patriarchy, well, I don't think you can labour the patriarchy point, because all roads lead there ultimately, but most women know this, I think.
Yeah.
What you're describing, don't they?
We do, yeah. Absolutely. You know, I think you say it lots of times when you talk about these subjects. I know the women won't be surprised, and women callers tend not to phone in because we just think, yeah, we know all this. We've been trying to tell you what is happening to us, and you're not acting like you care, even if behind closed doors with your wife, your daughter, whatever, that you're saying that it's very important that it stops and doesn't happen. You're not saying that to the wider group of women. You're not coming out to bat for us. You're not protecting us.
Just to be clear, you're generalising now about men. You're not having a go at me.
Absolutely. No, I listen to you every day, James. I think you're great.
Thank you. I don't know if that was fair to clarify that, but I've always got the image in my mind, Alice, of someone who's just turned the radio on and they'll be thinking, blimey, she's tearing a strip off, James. I thought he did quite well in this field. I thought he was quite, or he tried at least his best to make sure that these conversations are had more widely. And indeed, as I think we've proved today, and Alice would, I think, agree, conversations conducted almost entirely, well, so far, entirely with women. And it is one of those subjects where it happened to me during Me Too, and I have a wife and daughters, I don't have sons. And I was shocked by some of the stuff that came out in Me Too, and I'm not sure I've ever felt more ridiculous in my life. I don't want to use the word shame, but I will use the word ridiculous. I don't think I've ever felt more ridiculous in my life, that things my own wife had told me hadn't resonated or registered as much as they should have done. And because of the age that they were and are, it was a cusp moment with my daughters. And I look at them in public spaces very differently from how I would have looked at my wife 10 or 15 years ago. Now I look at them the same in public spaces. And what every woman knows, most men don't, because you're either perpetrator or head in the sand. You're either a perpetrator of inappropriate or offensive or illegal behaviour, or you're a minimiser. And most of us are minimisers. Partly, I think, because of the thing that goes hand in hand with the keeping the pin in the grenade. And contemplating the fact that all men, or at least lots and lots of men, are potentially disgusting, is a pretty horrible thing for a man to contemplate. Women don't need to, they know it, but men think that they somehow get tarred with the same brush, or that they become adjacent to the issue. So you go, oh, no, it can't be. So that's why you get these slightly ridiculous hashtags like not all men. They come from a relatively good place, but not a particularly important one, unless you're a man in a patriarchy, in which case your feelings and your thoughts are more important than everything else, up to and including victims of patriarchal abuse. And anyway, that's the end of my TED talk.
This is LBC.
Go where umbrellas are for cocktails. There's still time to get up to £300 off city breaks in EasyJet's Big Orange Sale, or get flights from £28 one way. EasyJet. Get out there. Selected dates and flights, limited availability, holiday sale ends 3rd of March, min spend and ATL protected, T's and C's apply.
Turn up your taste buds with Dolmio Intensify pasta sauces. From mild creamy garlic and black pepper to bold smoky garlic and sun-dried tomato,
whoa,
and spicy smoked paprika and chili.
Woo-hoo!
Try Dolmio Intensify, pasta sauces with serious flavour. Dolmio, yeah!
Things are really heating up in the country's smallest house.
Dad!
Squealed Mia Mouse.
We could save around £100 by setting the boiler flow temperature to 60 degrees.
And turning radiators down in rooms we don't use.
Interrupted Mo.
Yes, Mo.
Turn them down, not off, said Mia.
Plus finding and blocking drafts,
said Mo.
Should save enough to increase our allowance.
A little saves a lot. You could save around £100 a year off your energy bills with 3 tips at gov.uk/cleanenergy.
At Lidl, get a Valentine's menu worth falling for. With a mouth-watering starter, main, side and dessert from our deluxe range. And top it off with a crisp bottle of Prosecco. All from only £12.95 for two. So go on, dish up a little romance this year. Lidl, more to value.
Subject to availability, selected stores, GB only, B drink away.
This Wednesday, the £12 million Lotto jackpot must be won.
Must be won?
Yes. Lotto, from the National Lottery. It could be you. Estimated jackpot. Rules apply. 18 plus.
A Southern train is a place where you can wind down and catch up. A chance to let conversations flow and plans unfold. And swap doomscrolling for telling stories. Too good for the group chat. Make the journey part of the joy and save 1/3 with off-peak group tickets at southernrailway.com. Terms apply.
This is LBC with James O'Brien. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
It is 18 minutes after 11. Henry Reilly on the way in a moment with the latest installment of the latest episode of our investigation into what happens when you treat Nigel Farage's outfit with the same level of scrutiny that the Daily Mail treats the Labour Party. I didn't think this would be still running on Wednesday, but if anything, it's looking like it might reach the end of the week. And just in case you are confused or sceptical about that description of misogyny and sexism and racism always being at the very least bedfellows and quite possibly handmaidens, this sadly is unsigned, but a text comes in response to some of the incredibly powerful radio that you've been listening to. It says, James, this is lazy journalism, simply word soup. And this time last week they were messaging to say, deport all the migrants, vote reform. So, again, it's amazing, isn't it, that people keep providing me with all the proof I need to tie together the racism and the sexism that is typified by political figures like Nigel Farage, who, of course, defended Donald Trump when he boasted about grabbing women by their private parts. I think the word I used earlier was technically incorrect, anatomically incorrect, wasn't it? But I certainly can't use the word that Donald Trump used because, well, I just wouldn't anyway, even without the auspices of Ofcom keeping a close eye and on everything we do. And God bless Ofcom and all who sail in her. 11:19 is the time. Elaine is in Richmond to steer us back to this question of caring enough and making all the right noises, but when push comes to shove, never, whether it's Keir Starmer or the King, never actually doing the right thing until you absolutely have to. Elaine, what would you like to say?
Oh, hello. Yeah, I came in at the beginning of the programme with your statement of why don't we care, and have you noticed that this morning you've only had callers from women?
Well, Carl in Tetbury is up next. I don't want to scare him off, but yes, I do. I take your point, yes.
And the only person who sent you a text that you read out was in support of the King,
yeah,
with regard to his brother. That was a male perspective.
Yes, Robin Maidenhead. He was attacking Keir Starmer last week, but he was defending the King this morning.
Ah, well, there you go. So that just, the last caller before the break, you pretty much said a lot of what I was going to say about patriarchy, yeah, and misogyny, violence against women, the church against women, you know. I mean, I think it's a simple fact that we know, women care all the time. People like me have been a very active person in feminism, I think, without being too heavy-booted through my whole life. And I think people despair and they can't see a way for it to change from the media portrayals of things, from boots on the ground, men walking by you when you're having a tough day, and they go, smile, love,
cheer up, love
your face, you know.
It's constant. Let me read you this from Jenny. Women know this. We are fair game as soon as we go through puberty. There is a kind of vile tacit agreement that this isn't really paedophilia. If the victims had been younger, perhaps the response would be different. Everybody has a sort of threshold of what they are disgusted by. And this scandal does not meet that threshold for a huge number of people. And it is a male-female divide, really. I mean, not...
There really, really is, James. I mean, it's absolutely massive. I have a 30-year-old daughter, and the way men are behaving towards her on public transport, the comments, the way she's treated in the workplace, the way dating, you know, at the moment, men treating women in dating. I mean, I'm so worried about her future.
I'm sorry to hear that. We've gone backwards in the last 10 years.
On a daily basis, we've gone backwards. I was born in 57.
Yeah.
And I felt that we'd moved forward.
Well, we had.
Time. Yeah, we had. And I remember a conversation with colleagues one day saying, isn't it funny now? You literally don't get a guy whistling from a building site or from a van. And that's all changed. In fact, they chat to you nicely when you walk. I remember saying out loud that things had improved from the ground up and from the top down. And now I think we've regressed terribly of late.
On all these fronts.
World order, you know, the male dominance of Trump, Epstein, Gates, Musk, all these people, the wealth, the billionaires. I think everything's interlinked, isn't it, James?
I think it is. Some days more than others, but today very much. It's not a coincidence, is it? That yesterday I'm sitting down with Sadiq Khan for full disclosure, and he's talking about the N word and the P word being more or less excised from public discourse in the course of his lifetime. Things that were shouted at him and his friends when they were young, which were then we had at what a 15-20 year period where it was almost unimaginable, and now we're back. Now it's happening again, thanks to the rise of political forces that we track quite closely on this programme, and they're of course in the box seat on both sides of the Atlantic. And I don't know, it's not my place really. It's fine for people to remind us of that strange woman who Tom Swarbrick was talking to last week, but it's not my place to answer this question, but I think I can ask it. Why do women go along with, why do some women go along with it and become complicit in it? Not to the point of Ghislaine Maxwell or this strange Hervey woman that Tom spoke to, but to the point of, I remember taking a call years ago, Elaine, from somebody older than us, telling me that she used to be flattered when men pinched her bottom in the office, and it really sort of stuck with me, that idea, because she was nice and sensible and yet somehow bonkers at the same time.
Yeah.
So why do some women go along with it? Do we know?
I wish I knew. That's one of the questions that, I mean, the Ghislaine Maxwell thing is just, I think it's off the charts. I think some people, male or female, are just evil, frankly, unfortunately. Can I just say one really quick thing with the link that you've been talking about, the royal family?
Yes, absolutely.
I mean, are you honestly, or are people honestly expecting more from this royal family with their history, with their personal history, with Charles's history? Do you know, I mean, are we forgetting how he's behaved?
Well, he was an adulterer. He cheated on his wife and she cheated on him. But that doesn't lay the groundwork, does it, for failing to act responsibly or robustly enough with regards to a...
I think their morals need to be questioned all the way through history, and especially the last 100 years.
Well, I'd start with Charles I.
Well, okay, let's go back. But are we expecting the royal family and the institution, to actually step down in any way? They're clinging on. We've got men all over the world clinging on to power. Yeah. And that's what we have. And the answer to why we don't speak out, it's a very difficult situation. My daughter was in a work situation, a very important one of her first jobs.
Yes.
And an older colleague was just talking filth in her ear whenever she was in his proximity. God. And it grew and it grew and it grew. And she didn't know what to do. She wanted the job. She didn't know who to speak to because he was senior to her. And she put up with it for a period of time, and then she just, unfortunately for her career, she just left the job.
Well, I can't put up with this anymore, and I've got no confidence whatsoever.
She didn't feel that anybody around her, because she saw people laughing at comments that he would make and all of that. Yeah. She thought, I literally can't identify the person here that I would walk to say, this is how he speaks to me. This is what the intimidation and the sexism and misogyny is to me. And she didn't know, and I didn't find out till later. And being quite a forthright person, maybe more than her, I was furious. Yeah. I was like, well, it's not too late to go back. And she said, if I open up that can of worms, how long will that be for me to go through procedures to make retrospective, you know, complaints, this, that and the other? I need to be healthy, mentally healthy, and I need to move on with my life. And I know she feels a bit of a sense of guilt about not pointing that out. I know she does. But I felt so sorry for her in a really important step in her life, for this to be destroyed by one man.
And to be powerless in the face of it.
Well, she felt she was. She's normally very outspoken, but she was floored by it. Absolutely floored.
And exhausted.
Yeah. Tired to have to fight her exactly corner in that way when she was just trying to present and do a good job.
Exactly that. I'm sorry to hear that.
I've got one other little thing. It's just a tidbit at the end. When I was being driven home...
Let me just remind everybody. You're listening to The Elaine Show on LBC. News Bulletin Current...
I always kept waiting. I wrote
pot kettle. Pot kettle, Elaine. I can hardly have a go at anybody else for talking a lot, can I? Go on, fill your boots.
Well, yeah. My father had a colleague at work, and we used to... I was at school sitting at the desk next to his daughter. Yeah. My father was quite high up in a local company in a small town, and his colleague was the father of one of my friends at school, my best friends. And we lived away from the school, and we used to get lifts home from school when it rained. And on two or three occasions, he asked me to sit in the front seat. I was about 12. And he touched my leg two or three times and said I had lovely eyes and things like that. And it was a bit peculiar. And then it happened two or three times, and I went home, and my father was an old school guy, but I actually mentioned it to him in the kitchen while we were making tea. And about a week later, my friend came into school and said, we've got to move because my dad's been sacked.
Wow.
And we can't afford our house. He's lost his job. And I went home that night, and my dad came home from work quite late, worked very, very hard, and walked into the kitchen. And I looked at him, and he looked at me, and we didn't say a word. And he just looked at me, and I said, I can't name her.
Oh, of course.
They're moving house. And he went, yes, and that's all for the best, isn't it? And that was never mentioned again. He literally went back into the workplace, whatever excuse he used, and he sacked him.
Good grief.
And that's one of the really strong memories of my dad. He was a very authoritarian person. We didn't have a brilliant relationship, but
no,
he was
but he
not
knew what
prepared.
Was right. He knew yeah. He had lines. He had red lines.
He had red lights. I mentioned it to him. I saw his face change.
Gosh.
And that's what happened within a week. And I felt sorry for my friend and this man's wife.
So he pulled the pin.
He just got him. He got
he
him
pulled
gone.
The pin out of the grenade, didn't he?
He did.
Albeit that, you know, the grenade didn't really go off in your lives. It could have done. I mean, he could have had ramifications. Certainly, you know, appeals or what. What an incredible story. Thank you. I'm glad I didn't interrupt you or make you hurry up. That was such a bit of a shivery story, that. Probably what all dads really should do that, but how many of us could state with absolute confidence that we would? Because when push comes to shove, and for the avoidance of doubt, I'm very happy to report I've never been in a situation like Elaine's father, but how many of us can say with absolute certainty that we wouldn't prioritise keeping the pin in the grenade, depending on where that explosion took us? Took our lives, took our families, took our loved ones, took our livelihoods. How many of us would prioritise putting the pin in? You don't know the answer to that question, any more than you won't know the answer to the question I asked you yesterday, which I'm going to ask you again, because who goes Nazi? That incredible Dorothy Thompson article, I think from the late 30s in Harper's Magazine in the United States of America, which could not be more timely. Because as we talk about the reversal of progress in all of these areas, racism many days, sexism today, misogyny, abuse. We talk about the erosion of standards, the triumphs, if you like, of what many people called political correctness with a sneer in their voice. But political correctness was all about closing down men like Elaine's friend's father, letting them know that their behaviour was unacceptable. It was all about removing words like the N-word or the P-word from public discourse when used as pejoratives or insults. It was all about shutting down unacceptable and unbearable behaviours that were never going to be suffered by the people who were perpetrating them. And it started going backwards again. Somebody asked me yesterday for a podcast I recorded after interviewing Sadiq Khan, for full disclosure, about whether or not you're hopeful, whether or not you think that the blips are the good periods and the normality is the bad periods. And you have to believe that the blips are the bad periods. You have to believe that we're all fundamentally decent, that reacting to child sex abuse today, an Afghan asylum seeker convicted of rape yesterday, and many people much, much, much more upset about that than they are about rapes committed by men who look more like them. You have to believe that ultimately humanity will prevail and that we are fundamentally decent and equable, because if you don't believe that, you might as well give up and go home. It's 11:32. Dominic Ellis has your headlines.
Officials in Canada are investigating one of the country's deadliest mass shootings ever. At least 9 people were killed at a school and a nearby home in Tumbler Ridge. Few details have been released about the suspect, who's also dead. Sir Keir Starmer will face Prime Minister's questions shortly after promising he won't walk away from his mandate. He has resisted pressure to quit this week. And Tottenham have sacked their manager, Thomas Frank, after just 8 months in charge. He's had 2 wins in just 17 Premier League matches. LBC weather largely cloudy with outbreaks of rain through today. The best of any sunny spells in the south, a high of 13 degrees.
This is LBC.
One of the best things about a holiday with Saga is your chauffeur, who'll pick you up and drive you to your departure point. Whether you're river cruising along the Rhine, past storybook castles, or uncovering centuries of history on a tour of Japan. Even better, they'll pick you up and drive you home again afterwards. 2026 season now on sale. Search Saga Holidays. Experience is everything. Nationwide chauffeur service available on UK mainland. Full terms apply, over 50s only.
I found the piece I missed out on last season.
I found that nothing works up an appetite quite like clever shopping.
It's a perfect day to find what you're looking for at Vista Village.
I found a place where I can have it all.
It's just a short drive away, and you'll find every day feels like a sale. Vista Village. What will you find?
This time last year, Hassan was working in sales and spent his evenings gaming. Now, he's working as a prison officer.
You know what's going to happen, it's not worth it. Let's just go in there.
He's tackled cell fires, got through to some of the most challenging prisoners, and helped support their rehabilitation. He's done things he once thought he was never capable of, but he still loves his gaming. An extraordinary job done by someone like you. Search prison jobs now.
Yeah, I'm one of their biggest fans. I've got all the vinyl. First saw them at a tiny little place in Camden. Then as festival headliners a few years back. Oh, now that was special. So there's no chance I'd miss their world tour. In London, Lisbon and LA. Good thing I've been saving.
From down the road to across the globe, saving gets you there. Join the millions of people already saving with NS&I. Visit nsandi.com.
Lost World Play Barn, Dragon Castle Children's Farm, Jumping Pillows, Wallabies, Rocky Soft Play. Tommy Tractor Play Barn, Quadrapillar, Rowing Boats, Owl Displays, Meerkats, Honey Pot, Bears. Kids, put on your swimmers for Jungle Splash.
Yeah, let's go, Mum.
Right. Cannon Arena, Lemurs, Jungle Kingdom Go-Karts, Wave Runner 2, Magical Wood and Cafe.
Nutcatch Adventure Park.
The sun goes on and on and on and on.
Book now at nutcatch.com.
At Pets in a Pickle, we know what it's like welcoming a new pet into the family. For fuss-free pet insurance policies as unique as they are, visit petsinapickle.co.uk.
This is LBC. Message James O'Brien on WhatsApp now on 0345 60 60 973.
11:35 is the time. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. You can tell that things have happened on the programme when I start dreaming up titles for segments. Unfortunately, two things happen when I dream up a title for a segment. The first is, well, one of two things happen. The first is I immediately forget about it and it disappears, or I get very excited and order a jingle that takes 9 months to arrive because everybody's too busy giving the news agents whatever it is they've asked for recently, and I have completely lost all sense of enthusiasm by the time the jingle finally arrives. But anyway, we're thinking of calling this the Farage Files, because Henry Riley and I have this week stumbled into an investigation into what would happen if we treated Nigel Farage's outfit in the same way that the Daily Mail treats it. Well, in the same way that the Daily Mail and most of the UK media treats the Labour Party. We had four stories on Monday. We had four stories yesterday. We've probably run out of stories by today, Henry.
Five.
You sound like Len Goodman.
Yeah, sorry, yeah. Seven? five stories today. Sorry, that was a bit much, wasn't it?
Take it away, Maestro.
Okay, well, let's go first with working from home, which was obviously a conversation on LBC yesterday and today. This rally that Nigel Farage gave in Birmingham's, he said, quotes, "People aren't more productive working at home. It's a load of nonsense. They're more productive being with fellow human beings."
He hasn't had a job since he joined UKIP.
He said they're more productive being with fellow human beings, right, and working as part of a team. You can't go on the sick because you've got mild anxiety. Anyway, he went on and said, yeah, people aren't productive working at home. But we found two jobs by Reform UK in the last couple of months, one that's still active, that do have home working.
His own outfit?
Yes, working for Reform. So one current job vacancy, James, in case you're interested, is regional director for Reform South Central Region. It carries a 50 grand salary.
Okay.
And the location is home working with occasional travel within the region.
Right.
There's a second job.
Who's he going to blame for this?
This second job is on Grab Jobs. It's just closed. It was for something previously, but that was a remote slash work from home job to be a by-election manager for the party.
So that's the only, I mean, there could be more, but we've only spent about 10 minutes looking, and those are two jobs that are currently being advertised in his own outfit.
Yeah.
That involve working from home while he is simultaneously making strange speeches at strange rallies about why he would abolish working from home. I mean, there's nothing to stop him abolishing working from home in his own company, is there?
No, nothing to stop
him. But he hasn't.
According to these job adverts, no. One of them's still up, one of them has closed. Happy to be clear, but one of them is still up.
Have you applied?
No.
Go undercover?
No.
If you shaved your moustache off?
Yeah, I don't know. There's not much to shave off, to be honest. Other stories, James. Let's go to the Russia debate that took place in Parliament.
Yes.
Yeah, this was on Monday. It's because of a signature, that carried 114,000 signatures and demanded a public inquiry into the sort of relationship with Russia across the political spectrum.
Farage wants to make things absolutely crystal clear that Nathan Gill, his very close friend and protege and the leader of his party in Wales, who was convicted and sent to jail for taking bribes from a Kremlin stooge for essentially injecting propaganda talking points into public discourse. Farage must be very keen to distance himself from this. Did he speak at it, or was he just in the audience?
No, I mean, it was well attended, but there was no Reform UK MP. They've now got eight who attended that debate.
The 30p Lee?
No, none of them attended this.
The woman driven mad by black faces on television adverts?
Sarah Poachum was not at the debate. They've been accused of pandering to Russia.
I don't remember any others. Who
by
are the others?
One Labour MP. Was Sarah Poachum, Lee Anderson, Danny Kruger.
Was Danny Kruger not there?
Danny Kruger wasn't there.
Oh.
Suella Braverman.
Was Suella Braverman there?
Suella Braverman wasn't there.
Oh.
Robert Jenrick.
So none of them were there?
None of them.
Okay. That's a shame.
But the government does have this independent Ryecroft review that's set to publish next month, by the way. That was in the aftermath of the Nathan Gill sentencing, which is going to look at the relationship with Russia.
Of course, should remind our listeners that Vladimir Putin is the politician on this planet that Nigel Farage admires the most. It's important to distinguish him from Donald Trump, who is the bravest man that Nigel Farage has ever met. That's two, as far as if I'm keeping count correctly.
That's two. You're a fan of your numbers. Three is Reform donation, which is this. I mean, this has been bubbling away for a little while. It's fairly complex, so stay with me. But it was initially broken by the Sunday Times, and the Financial Times now have done some reporting into it, because the senior Labour MP Liam Byrne, who chairs the Business Select Committee, has said Companies House needs to look at this. It all centres around a £200,000 donation to Reform UK.
Oh, yeah.
And links to an Iranian-born billionaire. That's Sashan Gandahari, who's a British citizen. Now, the donations are made by John Richard Simpson, who's a church warden and conveyancer. And he's listed as the person with control of this company, IAL Limited. As I say, but last year, £200,000 of donations to Reform UK. But there's now been links from that company that he's involved with, and the Gandahari family. Now, they're important because they paid for Nigel Farage's recent trip to the World Economic Forum in Davos.
Oh, I see.
They also claim that Nigel Farage was an advisor to their organisation.
Yes.
Nigel Farage, spokesperson, categorically denies that, but did say that their company...
So what were
company,
they paying for, then?
Well, they did pay for Nigel Farage to be a delegate.
Yeah, but what do they get in return?
Well,
he's not advising them.
That's unclear.
Oh, okay.
But they paid for Mr. Farage and a member of staff to go to the World Economic Forum. The IAL, the company, said that this church warden, John Richard Simpson, is the person with significant control. But they did confirm that the Gandahari family are clients of RAL Limited.
Three.
Well, number four.
Or 11, if we were to be covering the whole week.
4, 8, 9, 10, 11. Yeah, 11. So this would be number 12.
Carry on. Yeah.
12, yeah. University Society. This is Bangor.
Oh, damn humanities degrees, eh? Honestly.
No, because social science, after all, isn't it? This is a university of Bangor, or actually not the university, because this is a student debating society. Now, what happened here is it's caused a bit of a stooshy up in Wales, because Reform's head of policy, Zia Yusuf, has now threatened to withhold funding from Bangor University after their student...
Oh, after winning power?
Well, yeah. Yeah, after winning power. Not that he pulls the purse strings at the moment. The Student Debating Society there refused to host two figures from Reform UK, one of whom was Sarah Poachin, the MP who you referenced earlier on.
The one who's driven mad by black faces on the television.
Who made that comment and has apologised. Bangor University received £30 million in state funding a year. Zia Yusuf said that much of that comes from Reform voting taxpayers. I wonder how they would feel being without it. However, Reform's Welsh branch, because they've got that new leader that we spoke about, Dan Thomas.
Do we know where he lives yet?
He claims to live in Wales, but has an address in Bath and was leader and is a councillor in Barnet up until a few months ago.
Okay.
In Barnet, London. He has said that that's not Reform Party policy. They don't want to defund Bangor University. Now, to get expertise on this, I spoke earlier with Podrick Reedy, who is editor-at-large of The Lead. He, crucially as well, was previously at Index on Censorship. And he told me about the sort of the idea here from Reform and the distinction between the society and the university.
What's happened here is that Reform have reached out and asked to speak. The Debating Society, which is a private members' society, which can, you know, dictate its own rules and who it wishes to speak and not to speak at their events, has declined and quoted their, yeah, said that, you know, Reform and Sarah Poachin are contrary to their values. And Reform have gone out with the story saying that they've been banned. Now, they've been no more banned than, say, you know, an LBC listener caller who does not get picked for the show that day. If I write an article and it doesn't get even submitted to a newspaper and it doesn't get used, that doesn't mean I'm banned. That means I don't have any right to speak there in the first place. Or indeed, you know, if I was to say to Reform that I want to speak at their conference and they politely declined, I don't think I claim that I've been banned. I hadn't been invited in the first place. But of course, Reform have got the headline they want now. And they can make a fuss, they can make Trumpian noises about defunding the university, which has nothing to do with the decision. So it's a weird success for Reform, but it has nothing to do with free speech.
So dishonest and pathetic. So if we don't invite Sarah Poachin to our birthday parties, we'll be accused of banning her.
Yes,
or if she asks to come to our birthday party.
And we said no, I've got an invite list.
I've got black friends, I don't want you to be driven mad by their faces, you might say. Then we'd be banning her from our birthday party.
Well, quite.
It wouldn't be
banned.
Certainly not wanting her at our birthday party.
And that distinction there, as Podrick Reedy makes about the university, very keen to stress that they have not banned Reform, rather one of their independent societies run by
which
students.
You pay to be a member of, presumably. I was at the University College Dublin Philosophical Debating Society last week. They are incredibly independent and entirely student-run. It's got absolutely nothing to do with central funding.
Yes.
They know. This is what we're reading between the lines. Podrick's well aware that they know this Reform. They're just trying to they are demonstrating contempt for the intelligence of their own supporters because they know that the headline and the provocation will work even though the facts don't back up the claim at all. Pathetic, as I say, and dishonest. That's three.
No, four. That was four.
Four.
This is
so
number
more.
Five. One more now. We're going to be slightly careful because obviously there's a by-election coming up. So this is with regards to the Gorton and Denton by-election. This has been widely publicised.
Full list of candidates is available at lbc.co.uk.
Thank you. There was Matt Goodwin, who is the Reform candidate. There was a hustings last night.
But he was in one of yesterday's stories slagging off Nigel Farage for being potentially an absolutely rubbish Prime Minister. But that was yesterday's story, not today's.
In a historic post, he did say that Mr Farage does not have the answers to Britain's problems and that Reform doesn't have the answers. But he's the candidate, and he pulled out of a hustings. The organisers, sources close to the organisers, have told me that that happened last minute and only minutes before he posted on social media. Now, the two reasons. The official reason, Matt Goodwin says in his statement, I've never been one to shy away from free and fair debate. I have serious concerns about the impartiality of the hustings that have been organised for tonight. Previous statements by the organising group give the clear impression that a fair and level platform will not be provided for all candidates. On that basis, I will not be attending. Now, it's organised by a local group called Local Voices. It was at the Gorton Methodist Church, and each candidate had 2 minutes to answer each question. I've also spoken with sources close to organising the event, and a charge levied at Mr Goodwin, which he has not responded to as of yet, is that he asked for a green room before the hustings.
What, all to himself?
Yeah, well, to have a sort of private moment maybe before the debate starts. But they told him that at a Methodist church.
He's working on an erotic novel.
Well, that would give us more content. But he did tell us that the sort of claim is that because it was at a Methodist church, James,
yes.
They're not a plenty green room for Methodist churches.
Presumably, and not much else.
Yeah, and so they I think the point was made that that wouldn't be possible.
Right.
And then obviously that the green room issue was not an issue in the end because Mr. Goodwin did not attend the debate.
And actually, to knit together the Welsh University, Bangor University, and that by-election, a full list of candidates is available at lbc.co.uk. The University Union, the Politics Society, Debating and Political Society, points out that they have zero tolerance for any form of racism, transphobia or homophobia displayed by the members of Reform UK. Most obviously, the woman who said that black and brown faces in television adverts drove her mad. And at this Methodist church in Gaulton, presumably there would have been British people present who Matthew Goodwin has expressed a view often and publicly that they are not British at all.
Well, and as you say, this particular university society making that point, they said that in a statement very clear about the values. With regards to the church, I mean, that is obviously very separate in that they, yes. They wanted Mr. Goodwin to attend, but they didn't have a green room and,
Bless him. Is he a snowflake?
Well, that's
has he ever tweeted about being a snowflake?
He has.
Oh,
said,
good. What did he say?
He proves that I'm not a snowflake.
Right. I think, as a general rule, anyone who goes on Twitter to say I'm not a snowflake, you can be fairly confident that they are in fact a snowflake.
And the Labour Party are now accusing him of being a snowflake.
Yes. It's 11:49 on Wednesday, and that's 13 stories already. Answering the question of what would it look like if anybody treated Reform in the same way that the Daily Mail and most of the UK media treat parties that are behind them currently in the opinion polls. Do we call time on it now, or shall I commission a jingle?
Oh, I wouldn't want to take resource away from the news agents. Up to you.
Well, very true.
You carry more weight.
There'll be hell to pay. There'll be hell to pay. Do we think there'll be more tomorrow, or do we feel that we've probably emptied the tank so far today? Or should we wait and see?
Well, these are all last 24 hours,
yeah,
so I'll keep an eye.
Are you in tomorrow? Are you in the
office? I'm in.
Okay,
yeah.
So maybe there'll be more tomorrow from the Farage Files featuring Henry Reilly. Watch this space.
Tom Swarbrick on LBC.
Labour's leader in Scotland tells him to go, yet Keir Starmer comes out fighting.
I will never walk away from the mandate I was given to change this country.
The Cabinet falls in line behind the Prime Minister, but how long can he hang on?
We've got a country to run, and the last thing we need right now is all this speculation looking inwards.
I'll be joined exclusively by the Deputy Leader of the Labour Party, Lucy Powell, this afternoon from 4.
Tom Swarbrick, Monday to Friday from 4 p.m. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
Nothing beats that electric feeling of live sport. As the proud automotive partner of Team GB, Vauxhall is supporting Britain's extraordinary athletes through every nail-biting, glue-to-the-box moment. Vauxhall is working towards a better future for our nation with its electric vehicle range, including the compact Vauxhall Combo Electric Van, made in Britain for Britain. Head to lbc.co.uk and tell us about your own extraordinary work feats to win £1,000.
At Ocado, you'll save 25% on your first shop and get free delivery. Which means if you were to buy a four-cheese pizza, you'd basically be getting one of the cheeses for free. Save and splurge at Ocado, the online supermarket. Geographical and other restrictions. Minimum spend £60 and charges apply. New customers only. Maximum saving £20. Terms at ocado.com.
This Wednesday, the £12 million Lotto jackpot must be won.
Must be won?
Yes. Lotto from the National Lottery. It could be you. Estimated jackpot. Rules apply. 18 plus.
Donations to British Heart Foundation fund scientific research that can help save lives. People like Joe, who's pitching his next big business plan. Maria, who's sending out her wedding invitations. And Jack, who's just being a teenager again. Because when you donate, you fund more than just science. You help save lives. British Heart Foundation funds research that aims to cure inherited heart muscle diseases. But our work is not done. Donate now at bhf.org.uk and keep us beating.
So, what's on your to-do list today? Why don't you check if you're eligible for pension credit? It tops up your pension income and also opens up help with heating bills, council tax, and more. Search pension credit on gov.uk or call 0800 991234. There's nothing to lose. Check today. Pension credit. Credit where credit's due. Eligibility criteria apply.
Tesco Insurance are driving down the cost of motoring with 10% off car insurance. Take out a car insurance policy before the 15th of May 2026 and you'll get 10% off with club card prices. We offer a range of cover options so you can choose the one that's right for you. Save 10% when you buy or renew a car policy with Tesco Insurance. Search Tesco Car Insurance and get a quote direct today. Club card required. Excludes add-ons. T's and C's apply.
James O'Brien. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
It's 11:53. You are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. PMQ's on the way, and some people still waiting to contribute to our conversation about why we don't care enough, whatever we might think or claim about victims of child sexual abuse. So we move from the relatively ridiculous with Henry back to the deadly serious with Carl, who's in Tetbury. I just need to warn you, Carl, that PMQs is one of those things I can't move or crash. So we've got 4 or 5 minutes. What made you pick up the phone, mate?
Really, I'm 45 and I haven't talked about this out loud outside of my house this whole time. And I'm shaking. My stepdad was my perpetrator when I was about 4 or 5 years old, and although it wasn't the exact same abuse as others, it was physical abuse, and it was, I suppose, what we would call it torture in this day and age.
Right.
Humiliation, demasculation. And he left when I was 7 or 8, and I found myself broken as a child, I think, for the rest of my days. And it wasn't until I joined the Royal Navy and that kind of made me as a man, the man I wanted to be.
Yeah.
And it's now I've got 2 daughters who are 6 years old. I've got twins. They give me the determination and the fight to stamp out this behaviour. If I ever see this in my workplaces, I put my 2 big boots on and I jump all over it. In a delicate way when required, of course.
I understand. Did anybody believe you? Did you tell anyone when you were young?
Yeah, so actually, so it all happened when I was 4 or 5,
yeah.
And we moved house and it stopped. But I told my mum when I was 9 on the way to the shop. And she kind of didn't probe too much, I suppose, but then years went by. I thought she'd dealt with it, if you like.
Yeah.
But then she said she contacted social services and they called me a liar. So
social services did?
Yeah, I mean, it was. I doubt whether the call was ever made. Yeah.
Oh, I see what you mean. So she told you she'd phoned social services and they said you were lying.
Oh, yeah, well, they would at least want to speak to me.
That's weapons grade keeping the pin in the grenade, isn't it, that?
Absolutely. So I left the house at 16 and I went away and never went back. Jumped into submarines, lived on the water for a while as well, so. it was like literally a duck to water. I built myself up.
I'm so glad to hear that. I mean, there is still that 4 or 5 year old boy somewhere inside you who needs looking after, isn't there?
There is, and I'm doing that now, finally. Oh, yeah.
Good. That makes me so happy.
And I think, you know, when it comes to, this happened in the next room, and it happened, and, I knew she wasn't asleep, put it that way.
Right.
Because he heard me to come in the room to do what he did to me.
Yeah.
You know? So I knew she wasn't oblivious to it. I just knew in the end that she didn't want to talk about it. So I raised it up when I was about 30 years old, actually, around about my 30th birthday.
Yeah.
And I was like, can we have a chat about it? Can we talk about a few things? And I got the shutter walls went up. I got the, why are you bringing it up now? Then I got the flying monkeys from my brother and sister, or my half-brother and sister, saying, why are you having a go at mum, blah, 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 blah. Okay. And we haven't spoke for 16 years.
First of all, well done, right? And I'm sorry. Second of all, do you have any understanding of what drove her to let you down so badly? Can you, I mean, sympathy probably is too strong a word, but comprehension is not. Go on.
I would say the biggest issue with victims bringing it up to either somebody who should have intervened or, you know, other or an authority is you hold a mirror up. So you show them either the monster who did it, or you show them the conspirators or the other people who were complicit or didn't intervene, and you show them a very ugly picture as a mirror. And I think one thing kicks in, whether it's institution or whether it's individual, and it's self-preservation. Whether it's preservation of the institution or whether it's preservation of their own beliefs, because if they went back into their minds, they would have to then reason with why they didn't intervene and so on and so forth.
The because she knew. Because she knew. And the only way she can cling on to the lie that she didn't know is by denying that it happened in the face of all the evidence to the contrary, up to and including alienating her own boy.
Absolutely. And you know what? I think I will never do that to my children.
I know you won't.
No matter what they turn up with, regardless of whatever it is, I am there, always.
So they didn't break you. Nobody broke you. Or if they did, fixed yourself. You put yourself back together.
They damn well didn't.
I'm proud to talk to you, Carl.
I'm a massive fan of yours as well, James, and I appreciate your, as a sailor, as a submariner, you are a beacon of at least hope and sensibility in this god-awful world at the minute. And I speak to my wife about a lot of this stuff, and she listens to you as well, and we respect you, and what is going on in the world right now, it's coming out, and we would rather know who the monsters are than not knowing who they are.
That's beautifully put, and thank you for the kind words as well, although they weren't necessary. It's a privilege to talk to you in such heartfelt context, and what powerful testimony you bring to the conversation. I mean, it's still a mystery, isn't it, and not a mystery at the same time, as to why we make all the right noises in all the right spaces, but we don't ever really follow through or deliver on it. It's coming up to 12 noon. PMQs is almost upon us. Natasha Clark is in the room where it happened. Well, not quite the room where it happens. The room where this happens. All eyes on Parliament, where at the moment that Kemi Badenoch gets to her feet, we will cross live. I mean, obvious and not obvious. Possibly we know what the overall thrust will be, but not the detail, perhaps.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, if we start with what we do know, it's probably going to be a very difficult PMQs for the Prime Minister, isn't it? And it was a very difficult one last week. Some people were saying we may have seen the last PMQs of the Prime Minister last week.
Some people, Natasha.
Some people, yeah. I didn't say it at the time. But it felt very difficult. Kemi Badenoch landed many thought at the time might be a very, very... It was a very damaging blow that Kemi Badenoch landed to get the Prime Minister to admit that he did know about that ongoing relationship with Epstein when he appointed Lord Mandelson. And this is going to be, I think, a very difficult one for him. He needs to show, I'm back. My cabinet are here, my cabinet are supporting me, I've got the support of my MPs, and he has spent the last 48 hours rebuilding that, right? So from Monday night, the coup that never was, essentially, the MP support was rebuilt on the Monday night of the parliamentary party, the cabinet tweeting their support, and he spent the last 48 hours building back up again to this position. And I wonder if James, you agree with what Stephen Swinford of The Times wrote this morning on social media. Feels like for the first time in a while, PMQs genuinely matters again and has done for some weeks now. It's beyond the usual carefully crafted pre-planned statements for social media, and it's now a proper bear pit that has significant political consequences. So I agree with some of that.
I think most political journalists will agree with that.
Yeah, but we would.
But I don't think punters will.
We were talking a few months ago how we thought Prime Minister's questions were boring, and now it feels like a real pivotal moment in the political week again.
I guess so. Although I don't think that the palpable hits that Kemi Badenoch scored last week have really had anything to do with what's happened to Keir Starmer subsequently.
No, I think it was. I think it was a very... Him admitting that,
it was
I think,
the money
the first time was felt. And no? MPs that I spoke to were quite shocked that it had come to that. And he did try not to answer the question a few times, and it fell to Kemi Badenoch to really push him on that. So I felt like that was a bit of a moment. We could see another one of those today.
What would it look like? What might be the entry point?
Well, it's a good question. There's a lot to pick from, right? You've got today the appointment of Matthew Doyle as a peer, and I think Kemi Badenoch might want to try to press him on that and link that to the Lord Mandelson scandal, because she's trying to paint this picture of Sir Keir Starmer as, you know, having a bit of a pattern of overlooking these issues and not having
Matthew Doyle, a former Downing Street communications guy who stayed friends with somebody after they were found to be a paedophile.
Charged with an offence and continued to campaign and to support alongside a man that later was convicted. And yes, she's trying to paint this picture.
He's lost the whip. He's had the whip removed.
He's had the whip removed, but like Lord Mandelson...
Why now?
Yeah, well, why now when this was known about in Westminster circles and was published in newspapers for the last couple of months? Mm. It does seem to be a bit of an oversight from the Prime Minister's team there, if indeed that's exactly what's happened. But of course, I think it's the chaos of the last few weeks and the Prime Minister's leadership. Is he the right man for the job? And that needs to be the thread that goes through all of Kemi Badenoch's questions today. And that's, I think, where she can most damage. I wonder whether she'll mention Wes Streeting. I haven't seen whether he's on the front. Oh, there he is. He's on the front bench. He's standing, sitting next to the Prime Minister. And that will be an important moment, I think, for her to note too.
Let's find out.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And can I associate my side of the House with the Prime Minister's words on the horrific stabbing in North London yesterday, as well as the shooting in Canada? When he was leader of the opposition, the Prime Minister said, and I quote, "I never turn on my staff. When they make mistakes, I carry the can." What changed?
Yeah. Prime Minister.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I've accepted responsibility and apologised for the mistakes that I made. But let me say this, Mr. Speaker. Let me say this, Mr. Speaker. Morgan McSweeney helped me change our party. Yeah. Helped me win a landslide election victory, which delivered for them the smallest Tory party in over 100 years. And what's her great achievement? To make it even smaller.
Can we not?
The whips have done a great job today. This is like the 37th. Oh, you said, yeah, exactly. Done a great job today getting them cheering. We all know that they've been sick for the last week. Because let's remember, Mr. Speaker, just last week, he told us that he had full confidence in his chief of staff, Morgan McSweeney. On Sunday, he sacked Morgan McSweeney. Last week, he resigned. Yes. Last week, Mr. Speaker, he was defending the Cabinet Secretary. Now he is sacking him. What changed?
Prime Minister.
Mr. Speaker, in January she said she had full confidence, 100% confidence, she said, be no more defections from her party. 48 hours later, the Shadow Foreign Minister defected. 8 days after that, the former Home Secretary defected. The only question now is, who's next? She needs to wake up. Her party is dying.
Mr. Speaker, the Prime Minister is demonstrating stratospheric levels of delusion if he thinks the problem is on this side of the House. And he didn't say anything about why the Cabinet Secretary is going. We know the truth. It is because he is throwing everyone under a bus except himself. And Mr. Speaker, the Mandelson episode was not an isolated incident. A few weeks ago, he announced a peerage for one Matthew Doyle, his former Director of Communications. Immediately after that, the Sunday Times published on the front page that Doyle campaigned for a man charged with child sex offences. Yet despite the Prime Minister knowing this, he gave Doyle a job for life in the House of Lords anyway. Why?
Prime Minister.
Mr. Speaker, Matthew Doyle did not give a full account of his actions. And on Monday, I promised my party and my country there would be change. And yesterday, I removed the whip from Matthew Doyle. I'll tell you what other action we've taken, Mr. Speaker. Along with the safeguarding minister, I and this government have introduced the most far-reaching Viol Against Women and Girls strategy. And I'll tell you what else we've done. This government has introduced a pay rise for millions of working-class women. What did the Leader of the Opposition do? She opposed it. This government's introducing greater protection for women at work. What did the Leader of the Opposition do? She opposed it. And I tell you what else she opposes. This government removing the disgusting rape clause that they put in place.
Mr. Speaker, the Prime Minister pretends not to know about Matthew Doyle. It was on the front page of the Sunday Times. He cannot explain why he gave this man a peerage, and I think they should be wondering why they're still cheering for him after that. Yeah. And the Prime Minister, you know, sometimes likes to claim, as he just did, that he cares about violence against women. The truth is, he only cares about the victims when he's trying to save his own skin. They can shake their heads. We saw it with grooming gangs. We saw it with Mandelson. And now we see it with Doyle. Isn't that what a former prosecutor would call an established pattern of behaviour?
Mr. Speaker, I'm going to take no lectures from the Tories in standards in public life. She defended Partygate for months and months and months. And even now she says it was overblown. The shadow foreign secretary broke the ministerial code by bullying. Boris Johnson kept her. The leader of the opposition promoted her. She sits on her front bench. Her former shadow justice secretary complained about not seeing enough white faces in Birmingham, and she was too weak to sack him for racism.
Nobody buys it, Mr. Speaker. Not even the Labour women, because they know he always puts the Downing Street Boys Club first. And how dare he criticise us? We weren't the ones stuffing government with hypocrites and paedophile apologists. He can't build a team, Mr. Speaker. He has no plan. He can't even run his own office, let alone the country. He is now dealing with a new scandal of appointing someone who campaigned for a man convicted of having indecent pictures of girls as young as 10. Isn't the Prime Minister ashamed that that will be his legacy?
Prime Minister.
Mr. Speaker, my legacy is changing my party and winning a general election. And I'll tell you this, I kicked my former leader out of my party. Her former leader, Liz Truss, broke the economy and has descended into bonkers conspiracy theories. I kicked her out of Parliament. She's too weak to kick her out of their party.
Mr. Speaker, he hasn't apologised for appointing Matthew Doyle because he won't take responsibility. Yeah. He never does, and they know it. The Prime Minister is now telling everyone that he's never lost a fight. It's because he won't step into the ring. He's never lost a fight. He's walked away from welfare reform. He won't stand up to the unions. He won't stand up to China. He can't even stand up to Mauritius. He's had, Mr. Speaker, he's had 3 cabinet secretaries, 4 chiefs of staff, 5 director of communications in just 18 months. And now he is mired in yet another scandal. Does he ever look in the mirror and ask himself, is the real problem staring him in the face?
Yeah. Mr. Speaker, I delivered a landslide victory for our government. Only 4 people have ever led the Labour Party to victory in a general election. I am one of them. And she talks about numbers. Let us remember, Mr. Speaker, 5 prime ministers, 7 chancellors, 8 home secretaries, 8 foreign secretaries, 16 housing secretaries, all completely useless, all failed Britain, and this Prime Minister's clearing up the mess. She comes here every week desperately fighting to save her dying party. I'm fighting to change our country. Interest rates down, inflation down, waiting lists down, child poverty down. And I'll tell you another thing's down, the number of Tory MPs.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The government has delivered the funding needed to rebuild the new Frimley Park Hospital after the party opposite made empty, unfunded promises to my constituents. Now we urgently need to get on with announcing the preferred site, along with the investment needed to improve public transport, road access and parking. Will the Prime Minister urge NHS England to make this a priority and help give much-needed clarity to Bracknell Forest residents?
Prime Minister. Well,
Mr. Speaker, delivering the new Frimley Park Hospital is a priority. Under the party opposite, his constituents were given totally empty promises. They failed patients and they failed staff. We put a proper plan and the funding to match, and the Trust are making real progress on the business case, and I want to see spades in the ground as quickly as possible.
Said David, leader of the Liberal Democrats.
Yeah. Mr. Speaker, can I associate myself with the Prime Minister's remarks about the dreadful stabbing of two children in Brent and about the horrifying shootings in British Columbia? Our thoughts and prayers are with the children's parents and the people of Canada, especially those grieving the loss of loved ones. Mm-hmm. Mr. Speaker, to appoint one paedophile supporter cannot be excused as misfortune. To appoint two shows a catastrophic lack of judgment. The Right Honourable Gentleman once told this House that when a Prime Minister refuses to take responsibility, and I quote, it only serves to convince people that things cannot get better, that governments cannot improve people's lives, and that progress is not possible because politics does not work. Does he still agree with himself? And does he share my fear that that is exactly what is happening now?
The Minister.
People in this country, millions of people, have been let down for years and years and years. And one of the reasons was austerity, which his party supported. He should take accountability and take responsibility for what he has inflicted on this country.
Surrender, baby.
Mr. Speaker, I think I touched a raw nerve. But I think the whole House will agree that the Manson scandal has shown yet again why we need a duty of candour for anyone and everyone in public office. Mr. Speaker, there should be no more delays in putting the Hillsborough Law on the statute books. After the long fight by the bereaved families and so many others, like the Mayor of Greater Manchester. The Prime Minister once said it would be one of the first things he did in Number 10. Will he finally do it now, even if it's the last thing he does?
Prime Minister!
The panel report in the Hillsborough case was when I started working on the Hillsborough case. That was in 2012, when his party were in power. Yeah. And they could have passed this law a long time ago and saved a lot of grief. I'm proud that this Labour government is bringing in a Hillsborough law, something I've committed to for a very, very long time.
Richard Quigley.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. As the Prime Minister will have heard me say, the Isle of Wight is a fantastic place
to
live.
That's almost bang on the money, seconds and minutes wise. It's 12:15. We'll pick over the bones of what you just heard after this.
LBC.
Did you know that if you buy your train tickets early, you could get a better price with Southeastern Advance Tickets? Whether you're planning a fun family day out or heading into town for a meeting, the earlier you buy, the cheaper your ticket could be. See our terms and conditions to check if it's the right ticket for you. Buy your advance train tickets now from the Southeastern app or website and pay no booking fees.
Southeastern.
At Ocado, you'll save 25% on your first shop and get free delivery. Which means if you were to buy a four-cheese pizza, you'd basically be getting one of the cheeses for free. Save and splurge at Ocado, the online supermarket. Geographical and other restrictions. Minimum spend £60 and charges apply. New customers only. Maximum saving £20. Terms at ocado.com.
When you're smiling.
Banning Dental Group Clinics. With over 5,000 top-rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, what you thought you were getting may not be what you ended up with. From unexpected site fee increases, running costs, a huge depreciation in value, many owners feel they've been missold. If you think this might be you, holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive the compensation you're entitled to. Text ASSIST to 78900 to find out more. That's ASSIST to 78900.
Across the country, thousands of drivers are feeling electric about switching to an EV. And here's why. They can go from London to Sheffield on a single charge that could cost around a fiver. They're ecstatic about that and the exhilarating feeling behind the wheel. Plus, with charging made simple at home, they're always ready for the drive ahead. I can see why they're into it. Switch to an EV and get that electric feeling. Cost and range dependent on tariffs, model and driving habits. For full details, visit gov.uk/cleanenergy.
actually quite funny. Sorry, not quite funny. Very funny. I'm surprised at how much I just laugh. Not that I'm surprised that you're funny.
When words fail, there's our number one Valentine's dine-in for £25, with options including succulent scallops and king prawns with roasted garlic butter, tender sirloin with triple-cooked fries, and creamy ruby and raspberry mousse, all from our number one range, plus a crisp bottle of Prosecco. Waitrose, the home of food lovers. Selected lines and stores subject to availability. Offer ends 15th of Feb. Please drink responsibly. Non-alcoholic drinks also available.
James O'Brien on LBC. Listen on your smart speaker. Just say, play LBC.
It's 17 minutes after 12. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. I'd read a random selection of texts. Aidan says, I'd say that was 50-50 the most animated I've heard Starmer. I like that because it's not necessarily a compliment or an insult. Keir Starmer is so 6-0s, much better when he goes on the attack, says Ben. Kemi Badenoch doesn't seem to be up to the job. She's failing to shake Starmer. I'm no Tory, but I'd like to see a more effective opposition, says Kenny. Open goal for Badenoch today if it weren't for her own party's record that she was part of. She has Marc Francois sitting beside her today. I noticed that as well. If that's what she is offering the country, then the Tories really are finished. Andy writes, afternoons, James. Starmer is on fire. Let me find something for balance. She has a lot of ammunition, but this is very poor from Badenoch. Kemi, all stones and glass houses. Starmer, this is from Chris. Starmer might be done if this weak performance is the best he has when his back is against the wall. And Mike, I think treading a middle ground, saying that looks likely to be the hardest PMQ Starmer will ever face. And Badenoch was incredibly forgettable. That's possibly a little unfair. I'm going to test you now on something, Natasha Clark.
I love a test. I don't love a test.
Where do these come from? Breathe, breathe, breathe. Pause, pause, pause. You are a serious person who does big things. Pivot to attacking Labour when uncomfortable. Remember, you are the standard bearer of the right. And finally, don't let people think you are easily wound up.
Gosh, you got my nose. How did you get my diary? No, I think you're referring to Kemi Badenoch's diary, are you not?
Yes. Yeah. Well, after she accused Keir Starmer of looking in the mirror or not looking in the mirror, I was reminded of what she apparently likes to intone to herself when she is looking in the mirror after she accidentally left her notebook behind in a hotel room. All of those things. My favourite is probably, you are a serious person who does big things. I'm going to start doing that before the show.
I tell myself that every day. Yeah,
before you come into the studio. Because you must be looking in the mirror, mustn't you? Because you're saying you to you are a... Anyway, sorry, what did you make of all that?
I mean, it was like we said, it was going to be a difficult one for Keir Starmer. I don't think he particularly did fantastically. It was a bit of an open goal. I agree with that texter there. Keir obviously had a little bit of fire in his belly. I think he was really rumbled by the Ed Davey question.
Yes.
He obviously knew that that Kemi Badenoch was going to mention all of what she did.
And it looks opportunistic when she does it. But whether it's glass houses and stones or whether it is the failure to implement Alexis J and all of these, you know, people paying proper attention find it disingenuous. It somehow seemed authentic when Ed Davey did it.
It did. It seemed much more authentic, much more serious when Ed Davey did it. And I don't think he was expecting it. And he clearly, as Davey said, touched a bit of a nerve because you saw the sort of feisty Keir Starmer come out. We're calling him Keir Unplugged.
Is that
Westminster Circles?
Oh,
I know. Well, we're not. Ed Miliband is.
Right.
But it feels like, you know, that is what back. This was one for the backbenchers, I think, today. And
yes,
you saw both sides of the House of Commons really rallying around their leaders. And actually, I think both of them did put in the performance that their MPs wanted to see. However, Keir Starmer didn't really want to get into any of the details about Mandelson, about Matthew Doyle. And it felt he was very evasive of some of those questions. Mm-hmm. He just didn't, you know, you saw by the fact that it was PMQs was a lot shorter, a minute or so shorter than it usually is. And that he felt like he was trying to cut his answers short a bit there. His back felt like it was up against the wall with every question that Kemi Badenoch threw at him. But I don't think she landed the killer blow that she did last week.
I think you're probably right. I'm surprised by obviously this isn't a scientific survey, but last week people were very warm towards Kemi Badenoch, even in some cases reluctantly. It's not even close to that this week. There's a lot more praise for Keir Starmer than either you or I have expressed. I guess perhaps people quite like hearing him sound angry.
I think so.
Because
I think
it is real, isn't it?
You're hearing a lot of people say they want him to stand down, but you're also hearing a lot of people that say they don't. And I think those voices, the people that are saying they don't want him to stand down, especially, you know, normal people. Mm. And I thought your phone-in that you did yesterday with what, you know, what do you think Keir Starmer should do now to turn it around was a fascinating one, and what people thought that they wanted to see. I don't think Keir Starmer knows quite how he's going to turn it around. He's obviously, you know, the number 10 Downing Street sort of fight back operation in the last few days has arguably been incredibly successful, because that's where we are now compared to where we were 3 days ago.
Yes.
I thought that he might quit. Thought that he might stand down a couple of days ago. He now appears that he is really going to fight this to the end. But what does that sort of next steps look like for Keir Starmer? What's he actually going to change? And that's not clear right now. Is he over the worst of this? Potentially. But he's obviously still got a huge mountain to climb. He's got so many other bear traps that he could potentially fall into.
And Matthew Doyle is, I mean, for all of the people who were, I mean, it's perhaps somewhat naively, but pretend or genuinely claiming that this was all a media confection and that Starmer hadn't done any. And you can understand why some people who don't do what we do for a living might look at how the Tories were treated, Johnson in particular, scandal after scandal after scandal, and hanging on to his job and defending wrongdoing and all of those things. And yes, much of the media is biased, but the Mandelson thing was huge. And to muster some defence of him, and then for Doyle to come along yesterday. I'm very bad at this. I don't have good news sense. I'm surprised the Doyle story isn't bigger. Is it because no one knows his name, whereas Mandelson has such a mythology, has such high status in Labour Party mythology?
Mm. It was at the time, I remember, sort of, in Westminster bubble circles, it was a big deal at the time.
Yeah, but it's not broken out,
but it's not. And I think it's because people don't know who he is. Mm. But I wonder, his Keir Starmer's defence today of Matthew Doyle was Matthew Doyle did not give a full account of his actions. That's exactly what he said about Lord Mandelson.
It could be true, though, on both occasions.
Absolutely could be true. But, you know, while Keir Starmer is unable to prove that, he can't, because the Metropolitan Police are saying, please don't release any documents. Can he reveal more about Matthew Doyle to try and prove his case? But equally, and we didn't hear it because we came to the break, but other MPs, including Stephen Flynn, saying that trying to thread this through Westminster and through what Keir Starmer's been doing, and saying, is he the most gullible DPP we've ever had?
I miss Stephen Flynn's contribution.
Yeah, I know, me too.
Since the SNP lost its status as the third party in Parliament. Speaking of which, why do we think Ed Davey came out with his clause? Expert.
Oh, really, really good. I don't know why he sort of went in, but I guess we're heading into May elections and he's got to start distancing himself a bit. He said, clearly touched a nerve. But then he went to throw him a bone about Hillsborough law, because that's an easy one for the Prime Minister to go, I'm bringing this law. You guys never did. It's on the way. What more can he say about that? That was a really easy one for
the
Prime
Minister. It was, wasn't it? They're both curious, actually. Yeah. But perhaps they cancel each other out in terms of curiosity. Daisy Cooper's given a big speech in the last day. When was it? Was it yesterday?
This morning, no?
This morning, was it? Well, no, I'm asking you. Yeah, you're the political editor.
This morning? Yes. She wants to break up the Treasury into two departments, and she's calling on Conservatives to join the Lib Dems.
Moderate Tories to join the Lib Dems. That was a contender for my phone-in this hour, or in the last hour. I'm a bit obsessed with Tamara in Telford, Natasha, who rang me a while ago when I was pontificating about whether or not this constituency exists of moderate Tories. Were they all secret extremists all along, who are, just tossing coins between Reform and Badenoch at the moment? Or is there this caucus that we usually now mention, people like Rory Stewart and David Gawke and Dominic Grieve and Anna Soubry, Michael Heseltine, Ken Clark, people who were, objectively quite decent and not obviously bigoted or racist? Where do they go? And Daisy Cooper, because Badenoch hasn't made a home for them. In fact, she's insisted she's not going to.
Yeah.
And they can't possibly go to Reform. Labour probably be still a little bit rich for their blood. Are there a lot of them? And is the Liberal Democrats now their most natural home?
I think yes. On your first point, you know, there was a discussed this a couple of weeks ago, didn't we? When Kemi Badenoch, we had that. I can't remember what was the name of that Tory group that's emerged recently, pressuring Kemi Badenoch to go more to the left.
Yeah, it was David Gawk. I can't remember either. Which exactly. Was it all really?
Yeah, exactly. It's sort of gone on with a little bit of a whimper. Well, but there was an attempt to try to bring Kemi Badenoch.
It was.
Back
I mean, it, they could have called it "We're Not All Mad" group. They didn't, but yeah, that's what they were trying to do, and yeah. it's withering because she made it clear immediately that. No, we don't want anybody moderate in our party, which is an extraordinary position to adopt.
Rather than saying, actually, you know what, we're all coming together, the Tory party were a broad church, and I think that's what they've always been, and that's why they've always been a very good election-winning machine, because they do have a very broad church of opinion, including the left of the Conservative Party, and that group, which you would include David Gawk and Rory Stewart and all those people, they're sort of soft left of the Conservatives. That's why they've always been so good at winning elections. They have the Mount Francois, the Kemi Badenochs, the Robert Jenricks, and they have the David Gawks and the Rory Stewarts.
Because, of course, there was room in her party for Robert Jenrick and his blatant racism when he started complaining about literally the colour of people's faces in Birmingham. And as Starmer has pointed out a couple of times now, he didn't get sacked for that.
Mm.
And yet to say there's no room in the party for people who could be loosely assembled under the umbrella that says we don't like racism, actually, and we think Rishi Sunak is English.
Yeah.
She was telling them to sling their hook. Mm. And Daisy Cooper is there with her collection tin, rattling her tin, hoping to...
Yeah, she should have made that speech a couple of weeks ago after Kemi Badenoch said, no, you can get out. And she should have said, well, you're welcome here, guys.
Final question. I don't want to go to the news a bit early because we've got a lot of guests in the next bit of the programme. Is Ed Davey's job completely safe?
I don't think so, you know.
So they're all fragile, really.
I think when you look at the left and you look at the Green Party leader, Zach Polanski, doing incredibly well, you look at the Labour Party not doing so well, many people who would expect the Liberal Democrats to be capitalising, and according to the polls, they're not. Obviously, Ed Davey had a fantastic last election, right? Taking the party, you know, and rebuilding it from the Nick Clegg decimation that we saw, and building it back. But, you know, I don't think so. I think many people in his party are frustrated with the direction of travel, and I don't know if he'll make it to the next election either.
Oh, well, keeps us in business. That's it for another week. Natasha Clarke, LBC's political editor, thank you very much indeed. A little earlier than usual, at just after 12:28, we head to the headlines with Amelia Cox.
The Prime Minister has faced questions over his decision to put his former Director of Communications in the House of Lords. Matthew Doyle yesterday apologised after campaigning for a former Labour councillor who had been charged over indecent images of children and later admitted it. Canadian authorities are investigating one of the country's deadliest mass shootings, with at least 9 people killed. Few details have been released about the suspect, who's also dead, after they opened fire at a school and nearby home in Tumbler Ridge. And Tottenham Hotspur have sacked manager Thomas Frank after just 8 months in charge. Spurs are 16th in the Premier League and just 5 points above the relegation zone. LBC weather: prolonged spells of rain pushing northwards across northern areas. Heavier rain for Scotland, but briefly bright in the south with cloud and rain later. A high of 13 degrees.
This is LBC.
This is what award-winning customer service sounds like from real Octopus Energy calls.
Octopus are an absolute breath of fresh air.
Your customer service was tip-top, you know, I couldn't fault it.
People are friendly on the telephone, you can always get a problem solved.
People like yourself and all of your colleagues have done such a wonderful job.
The customer service is really good.
Octopus Energy, great value and outstanding customer service, recommended by Which? 8 years running.
Shine Night Walk London is a 10K, half marathon or full marathon supported walk around the city at night on the 19th of September to raise vital money for Cancer Research UK. It's also...
everyone walking with all their colours, twinkling away.
You can actually see how nice London is. And London is different at night time.
Celebration of life, and it gives hope.
Step towards a brighter future at shinewalk.org today to get 30% off your entry. Together, we are beating cancer. T's and C's apply.
Turn up your taste buds with Dolmio Intensify pasta sauces. From mild creamy garlic and black pepper to bold smoky garlic and sun-dried tomato.
Whoa!
And spicy smoked paprika and chili.
Woo-hoo!
Try Dolmio Intensify pasta sauces with serious flavor. Dolmio, yeah!
Buying a home on a holiday park was the retreat you always wanted. But then came unexpected site fee increases. And that was before the dramatic loss in value. If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, you may have been missold. holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive thousands in compensation. Text ASSIST to 78900. That's ASSIST to 78900.
Psst. Hey, dogs. Yeah, I'm talking to you. If you're tired of dry, tasteless kibble or slop that plops out of a tin, you're going to want to hear this. Butternut Box makes only the freshest dog food with juicy meat and tender veg. It's the kind of food that makes dogs, tongue out, running around the kitchen happy. Let's hope your human heard this too. Butternut Box. Fresh food, happy dogs. Try Butternut Box today and get 25% off your first two boxes. Offer available online in the UK and Ireland to first-time customers only.
Octopus Energy. Great value and outstanding customer service. Recommended by Which? 8 years running. Octopus Energy.
James O'Brien on LBC.
12:32 is the time. I mentioned to you earlier that I suspect we are going to encounter more cases like this in the coming days, weeks, months. But let's begin with the one that we know about, or even perhaps the six that we know about, that the one that has prompted the our interest in it. Seamus Cullerton has been detained by ICE, the Immigration and Customs Enforcement Operation in the United States of America, since September. And it's not entirely clear why. Attorney Ogor Winnie-Okoye is his lawyer, and prior to a press conference later today that will be attended by Seamus's wife, Tiffany, Ogor Winnie has very kindly managed to squeeze us into their schedule. What does Seamus understand, or indeed, what does his attorney understand the reason for his incarceration to be?
Okay, that's a great question. Good morning, James. It's early here and snowy on the ground. I'm trying to keep safe while I'm driving and answering the questions.
Thank you.
Okay, so Seamus entered the United States as a visa waiver entrant in September of 2009. The implication of entering as a visa waiver entrant is that you also implicitly give up your right to contest removability if you overstay by 90 days, which is the time you're mandated to stay for. Seamus did overstay for 90 days, and that was back in 2009. Seamus since established his life in the United States, owns a small construction plastering business, subsequently marries Tiffany, submits the paperwork required to adjust status, which is essentially get a green card, and had his employment authorization approved. Let me be clear, there is a statutory exception for people like Seamus who are married to U.S. citizens because of being an immediate relative to a U.S. citizen. It's etched in our immigration statutes. It is also a lot of policy memos given preference. Policy memos from the United States Citizenship and Immigration Services, which is the agency primarily versed with adjudicating immigration petitions. So historically, and in the 22 years that I've done this work, It's not a problem if the person eventually marries a U.S. citizen. They get the special status of an immediate relative, and typically just they will have their petition adjudicated. So Seamus did inform the officers at the time of his arrest, wait, I have an interview for my green card. It didn't mean anything. He still was, arrested and detained. And that's why we're here today.
When and where was he arrested?
So he was arrested in Massachusetts at the Home Depot. He's a construction guy. I guess he said he went to take back some items he didn't need that he purchased. And he happened to be at the wrong place at the wrong time. And that was how he became a casualty of,
What were they checking? How did they establish that he was, who he is, as it were?
So they said they ran a license plate. You would know if you run someone's license plate whether or not the person has necessary papers. They said they ran a license plate, but also they typically usually situated in places like that. The Supreme Court said it was okay for them to go to such places knowing that non-U.S. citizens work,
In the construction industry, of course. Yes, I hear you. What do we know about the circumstances of his custody? What sort of facility is he in, and how's he getting on at this detention center? Because I think he was moved to Texas. He lives in Boston, but he was moved to Texas last September.
Yes, he was originally moved from Burlington, Massachusetts, as Boston to Batavia, New York, and then ultimately to El Paso, Texas. He is currently located at the El Paso Camp East, Montana, El Paso, Texas. It's like a makeshift, it's like a makeshift facility, but he's been there for 4.5 months.
I saw him
2 weeks ago.
Sort of condition is he in? What sort of conditions is he experiencing in the facility, and what sort of shape is he in?
So I can only speak to what I know. I think he gave an extensive interview to some Irish newspaper or program describing the horrendous condition. I can only speak to what I saw. He looked like he lost at least 40 pounds, and he also looked like he was yellow, like someone who was jaundiced, and he was not doing well when I saw him, complaining about toothache and so all sorts of things. But that's what I saw. I can't speak to what he's experiencing.
I understand. What's your job now? I mean, what is?
Well, we have done a habeas complaint, essentially challenging the unlawfulness of his detention and the lack of notice. A judge just came back about 2 weeks ago, essentially reiterating that the no clause, no contest clause of the visa waiver program sort of like ties her hands. And there was a question of whether or not he was given proper notice. The government got papers showing signatures that he vehemently denies were his.
Yeah.
The judge pointed out all of the, egregious mistakes by the government, but still did side with the government. So at this time, we are recalibrating and thinking of petition for review, the next step, or just, I think at this stage, it's a matter of also putting pressure. His detention is inexplicable, essentially given the statutory exception and statutory preference given to people in his category. It's just never happened that I know of in all the times that I've done this work that someone who is married to a U.S. citizen, has no criminal record, has been well established, just poses no danger to public safety or a flight risk. Just someone who's an asset to his community, just an all-around model immigrant that submits a paperwork based on a marriage to a U.S. citizen is just still wanting to be denied, deported. But I don't know. It's inexplicable. So it's the pressure where a lot of people on this in our office and a lot of volunteers just contacting senators and representatives to see, because all it is a favorable discretion. If the Department of Homeland Security or ICE says, okay, I will just exercise the favorable discretion that they should have done in September, he would get out today and he will get the same paper. He would get into his interview and get the same paper that they say he lacks. So that's where we're at today.
Wow. Thank you very much indeed. I know you're very busy today, and this the press conference with Seamus's wife, Tiffany, is scheduled for later today. Attorney Ogor Winnie Okoye, thank you very much indeed. Seamus Cullerton's lawyer. That interview with Seamus, if you want to hear it, was on the RTE in Ireland with the Transport Minister, actually, Dara O'Brien, no relation, saying that the highest level of government is now addressing this case. I just have a suspicion that there is a lot more of this going on involving Irish and British people than is currently being picked up on or reported, or that the Financial Times had a sniff of the story yesterday, although that involved criminal records or misdemeanors. I just watch this space, okay? And let me know if you're aware of any people in similar situations, whether it's happened in the States or at the embassy here or even potentially at airports on either side of the Atlantic. Simon Marks is on the other side of the Atlantic. LBC's Washington correspondent joins us live. I mean, it's one of those days where I don't know where to start, Simon, so I'll let you decide. I'll delegate in the spirit of Keir Starmer.
Well, James, just on the issue of Seamus Cullerton, to put it into its broader perspective, one of the reasons why the discretion no longer applies in these cases, or is no longer being applied in these cases, is because that for ICE and the Border Patrol, this is now a numbers game in the United States. They are being told by President Trump himself, by Stephen Miller, the Deputy White House Chief of Staff, to accelerate the number of people that are being rounded up and thrown out of the country. And to put the numbers into perspective, Seamus Cullerton is one of more than 69,000 people who are currently in detention across the United States awaiting deportation. And actually, that attorney is lucky that she was able to find him, because all over the country there are lawyers now struggling even to locate their clients in these ICE and Border Patrol facilities nationwide. And plans are being laid, even right here in the Washington, D.C. area, to build more detention centers and camps that the government intends to fill as those mass deportations accelerate. I mean, we've all taken our eyes off Minneapolis.
Yeah.
It was only last month that two American citizens lost their lives, I think it is fair to say, completely unnecessarily, at the hands of ICE and the Border Patrol in Minneapolis. And there have been these promises to remove 700 immigration agents from the streets. But on the ground in Minneapolis, there is still tremendous fear, particularly among migrant communities and people who are opening the doors of their homes and giving literal house room to people who are afraid to go out on the streets, worried that the remaining more than 2,000 ICE and Border Patrol agents are going to sweep them off those streets. So, you know, we've got to keep very mindful of the unprecedented scale of all of this and the brutality of the treatment. It is fair to say that Barack Obama deported more people than Donald Trump is currently deporting. Obama was always called here the deporter in chief. But it's the brutality of all of this that is so different.
Sweet summer child that I am, I was going to ask why they're doing it when the promise was, of course, just to focus upon criminals and gang members and people who eat cats and dogs and various other nonsenses and lies. But, of course, that's why the numbers matter, because they'll claim at some point that all the people they have deported are in those categories, even though they're categorically and demonstrably not, because the truth left the building some time ago. Epstein. We got a prime minister, you've probably heard, in all sorts of trouble, despite not being in the files. Donald Trump's regime is full of people who are, including, of course, him. Now, this is a meaningless statistic, but I think people will enjoy it. He appears in it more times than the words Harry Potter appear in all seven Harry Potter books. But Lutnick is the one probably with the most uncomfortable questions to answer.
Yeah, well, I think it is worth making the point that Donald Trump claims that he's been absolved by the release of those 3 million pages of documents a few days ago. I mean, absolution is still quite a way off for President Trump. There are all sorts of questions swirling, particularly now that we know that in July of 2006, he told the police chief in Palm Beach in Florida that he was delighted that moves were being made against Jeffrey Epstein. Thank goodness you're stopping him. And Trump told the police chief that everybody knew about Epstein's evil antics, and indeed specifically suggested to the police chief, this is according to an interview that the FBI conducted with that former police chief in 2019, told him to keep an eye to investigate Ghislaine Maxwell. She's the evil one, he said. This is the same President Trump who says that he was completely unaware of anything untoward taking place in Epstein's world, just didn't like him, thought he was, not the right kind of person that he wanted at Mar-a-Lago, and so threw him out of the club. So the White House has got some explaining to do on that. Yesterday, it was Commerce Secretary Howard Lutnick. Well, or not, yes, exactly. Precisely. They won't be doing any explaining. No, precisely. Exactly. Yesterday, of course, it was Commerce Secretary Howard Lutnick who found himself doing some explaining under oath in the Senate. He was testifying before the Appropriations Subcommittee because Howard Lutnick's another one who has said he cut Epstein off as early as 2005, wanted nothing to do with him. But then then the documents revealed that actually Lutnick and his entire family and family friends of theirs had lunch with Epstein on Epstein's island in the Caribbean in 2012. And then there was a subsequent meeting with Epstein at his New York home. So there are calls growing for Lutnick either to be fired or to resign. And remember, he's a big deal. He's the big, cocky, garrulous architect of Donald Trump's tariffs policy. He's been one of the architects of Trump's global trade war. At the moment, the White House is circling the wagons and insisting he's staying within the administration. But he's certainly been caught out by the documents release of earlier this month, with every possibility that if more documents come out, there will be more revelations about him and indeed Donald Trump. We have to say both men, of course, deny any wrongdoing.
Yes, although I think Lutnick would be toast under any previous regime for the simple contradiction of his own public claims with regards to contact. And 2012, 4 years after Epstein was convicted of soliciting a minor for prostitution. Do you know, somewhat unexpectedly, Charles I popped up in our contemplations earlier today when we were talking about the Epstein impact on the monarchy, on the current King Charles III. So Charles I, if my history is correct, the Civil War, of the many seeds that started the Civil War, it was Charles I trying to use the full force of the law to punish parliamentarians who had said mean things about him or things that he didn't like. Donald Trump is up to similar antics, I think, and has failed so far.
Yes, well, he's trying to via his entirely sycophantic and pliant U.S. attorney here in Washington, D.C., a woman by the name of Jean Pirro, a former judge in Westchester County, New York, but in national terms, much better known as a former vituperative pro-Trump host on Fox News. She was appointed to the U.S. Attorney's Office here in Washington, D.C., and she basically is one of Trump's hatchet people. He says, I think we ought to be pursuing this criminal investigation. She doesn't push back at all. She jumps up, salutes, and says, yes, absolutely. She is the woman who brought the prosecution, the indictment, against the Fed chair, Jerome Powell. The White House said it knew nothing of this before suddenly discovering that Jerome Powell was being looked at for possible criminal prosecution over completely trumped up charges relating to the cost of refurbishment work at the Federal Reserve headquarters. Now, Judge Pirro has been unable to secure an indictment before a grand jury here in Washington so that she could prosecute six Democrat lawmakers who made a video doing nothing more than telling members of the armed forces here that they should not obey orders that are unlawful. And of course, this was around the time that the National Guard was first being mobilized here in Washington, D.C. There were threats by Trump to invoke the Insurrection Act of 1807. Those threats still outstanding. Every possibility that he will do it later this year and flood the streets of particularly Democrat-run cities with active duty troops and military personnel. So these six Democrat lawmakers put a video together saying to members of the serving military, you know, don't obey orders that are unlawful because you'll be on the hook if you do it. And that was considered seditious treason by Pete Hegseth, the Secretary of War, and the President. And Judge U.S. Attorney Pirro tried to indict those six lawmakers, and the grand jury here was not buying it. This was the same U.S. Attorney's Office that also couldn't get an indictment against a former Department of Justice employee who was fired, and I am not making this up, for throwing a sandwich at federal law enforcement agents on the streets of Washington, D.C. She couldn't get an indictment to prosecute a bloke who had chucked a sandwich at some law enforcement officers, but they are still at it in that U.S. Attorney's Office here in Washington.
They're definitely not snowflakes. Finally, and briefly, if you would, because I've got something important up next, something else important up next. This, I didn't even know we had a special envoy to the UK. I didn't even know Trump had a special envoy to the UK, but he's meeting with the president later today.
Yes, you wouldn't know it because he hasn't done a thing, but this is Mark Burnett, who was the creator of The Apprentice therefore a good mate of Donald Trump's. Also a man who's sitting on a vast video archive of Donald Trump's that has not been released to the public for curious reasons. Mark Burnett was appointed special envoy, not the same as ambassador. No one really understood what all that meant. He was supposed to build a bridge between Washington and Westminster. If you look at the US Embassy's website in the UK, there is no reference to any activity by Mark Burnett over the last year. He's now told Politico that he has left the diplomatic service. Tonight, he's meeting the president at the White House for a closed-door meeting. It's on the president's schedule. Maybe this is the departure. Yeah. This is the thank you for not doing very much, but we're going to keep an eye on it.
So, the mystery, of course, how will we tell whether he's still in the job or not, given how he did when he had it? Simon Marks, thank you very much. Up next, I need you to just go to the music room, please, and get the world's tiniest violin, because the former editor of the Daily Mail, Paul Dacre, is in court explaining how upset he is by some of the allegations that he's facing. More on that after this.
Coming up at 1 on LBC, Sheila Fogarty.
Keir Starmer faced a barrage of questions in the Commons about his judgment. Are you glad he's still there? Sarah Ferguson wants a comeback, but to what? And public confessions of infidelity. Do me a favour.
Sheila Fogarty at 1. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
Selling your van can be super simple if you choose We Buy Any Van. They're on average 11 minutes away, so you can get it all sorted in under an hour. If only they could make keeping your van clean simpler. And spotless.
Oh, for crying out loud.
We Buy Any Van. Selling made simple. To get a quote in 30 seconds, enter your reg number now at webuyanyvan.com.
You want £1 million.
I'd love £1 million.
So you enter the birthday draw and you think of a way to spend £1 million.
I'd deposit regularly into a retirement fund that safely tracks the market.
It's a lucky day and you win the birthday draw.
I can't believe it!
And you buy a snake and a superbike instead.
Yeah, baby!
Is it your lucky day? For your chance to win £1 million, just search the birthday draw and enter now. From Global and ITV. 18 plus UK only, no purchase necessary.
So, what's on your to-do list today? Why don't you check if you're eligible for pension credit? It tops up your pension income and also opens up help with heating bills, council tax, and more. Search pension credit on gov.uk or call 0800 99 1234. There's nothing to lose. Check today. Pension credit. Credit where credit's due. Eligibility criteria apply.
When you're smiling.
Banning Dental Group Clinics. With over 5,000 top-rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
You look really nice tonight. Not that you don't look nice normally. It's just I can tell you've made an effort. Not that you look scruffy the rest of the
time. When words fail, there's our number one Valentine's dine-in for £25. With options including succulent scallops and king prawns with roasted garlic butter, tender sirloin with triple-cooked fries, and creamy ruby and raspberry mousse, all from our number one range, plus a crisp bottle of Prosecco. Waitrose, the home of food lovers. Selected lines and stores subject to availability. Offer ends 15th of Feb. Please drink responsibly. Non-alcoholic drinks also available.
How does a $20 golf gadget end up being used as a bomb detector in war zones worldwide? I'm Alice Levine and this is Explosive Lies, the podcast exposing a scam that fooled governments and security services across the globe. Open our free Global Player app and search Explosive Lies to start listening today.
Leading Britain's conversation, LBC, with James O'Brien.
James, we don't have loads of time. Let's get straight to it. Oh, OK. 12.55 is the time. Emma Jones is a board director at Hacked Off. She's been in the High Court this morning where Paul Dacre, who has made a career, many would argue, out of ruining lives, has been complaining about some of the allegations that his organisation, the Daily Mail group, is facing. Emma has been observing proceedings. Emma, what can you tell us?
Well, we were expecting, you know, the man behind the curtain to be this commanding presence. And yet what we got from Paul Dacre really was a bit of a shambolic performance because, He claims to have absolutely no knowledge. He's been shown invoice after invoice showing his paper to be the top user of PIs, private investigators, and yet he claims it's something that he just didn't know about. £3 million worth of invoices were found during the course of this investigation in a box, which seemed to have been sort of whittled away somewhere. Anyway, they were unearthed, and Mr. Dacre claims he didn't know what they were for.
Was he ambushed? For. Was he ambushed by that, Emma? Would he not have known that the prosecution was going to produce this box like a rabbit from a hat when he arrived in the witness box earlier? Yesterday.
He did know about this, but he claimed whenever pressed on the detail that it wasn't something that was within his reach.
As
editor-in-chief of the two papers, he claimed no knowledge of what went on and kept asking for specifics. When he was given the specifics by David Sherborne, he then claimed no knowledge of the stories and his memory became flaky. He veered from a very sort of flaky kind of nervous performance to a man full of hyperbole when he needed to be. He wanted to put out statements of it sort of being unjust, you know, statements that he thought would make the headlines. But then when pressed on the details, his voice changed. He became quiet and muttered, really.
and more today, more to go. What time does it wrap up? Because only 2 days of cross-examination, I think, for
Paul Dacre. which we thought there would be more, but he's been let off quite lightly. We don't know why. And his legal chief, Liz Hartley, will be on next, followed by all the reporters, which will be interesting because he's laid a lot of the blame, really, on the reporters and said that apparently all the reporters were carrying around a code of conduct in their pockets as part of their role. Well, I worked at that paper and I've never seen anyone with a code of conduct in their back pocket, I'll tell you that much.
Well, I was only the video games reviewer, so I don't think I'd have been given one anyway, but I take your point, Emma Jones. Many thanks. Let me detain you no longer. Back in court later this afternoon when the man responsible for the enemies of the people, describing judges, of course, the crush the saboteurs, describing democratically elected MPs, attacks upon academic freedom. One columnist, Dick Littlejohn, cited by a coroner at the inquest into the suicide of a woman as a contributor of significance to the general conversation, all of these things. But he's very upset by the allegations being brought by Prince Harry, Stephen Lawrence's mum Doreen, Sir Elton John, Elizabeth Hurley, and others. It's coming up to 12:59. You are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. If you missed any, I might even stroll down to the High Court myself later and report back tomorrow. If you missed any of today's show, you can listen back on our free Global Player app or the LBC app, where you can also stay up to date with all the latest news, videos and opinion. You can listen to a range of podcasts, including James O'Brien Daily, the best bits from this show every day. And Full Disclosure, which is rather splendid this week. Download the official LBC app featuring Mark Constantine, who founded Lush, and like Sheila Fogarty, has synesthesia. It's all free from your app store now. Coming up at 4 on LBC.
In case people weren't listening, I do.
Yes, Tom saw it, but now it's time for Sheila Fogarty.
You've been to Ireland, haven't you?
Ah, it's funny you should say that. Are you looking at my knitwear?
I'm looking at your gorgeous Aran sweater.
I actually had this delivered from Ireland and paid duty because of Brexit.
Well done, yeah.
And then arrived in Ireland and it turned out...
And saw it in the shops.
Yes, but I did. So the duty cancelled out the online discount. They're nice jumpers.
They're lovely. You look like, you know when you buy a picture frame and there's a guy in the picture frame?
That's what I was going for.
And he looks like he might be, you know, a Canadian...
That's exactly what I was going for. Yes,
whatever.
That's me. Rugged.
Look a bit rugged and handsome. Thanks, those are the words I was struggling to find. Yeah. That's great. You may or may not know that I absolutely loathe public proposals of marriage. Like, massively loathe them. I hate even more public confessions of infidelity. Just no, absolutely not. And a winter Olympian, a biathlon no less, a man who spends his time skiing and shooting rifles, another red flag, has done such a thing. Going to talk about that from three. Can't bear it. Tell you why then. Two, Sarah Ferguson wants to make a public comeback, does she now? I've got some advice for her. I wonder whether you do. But straight up after the news, a barrage of questions for Keir Starmer in the Commons about his judgment. Are you glad he's still there? I'm glad he's still there.
On your radio,
on the LBC app and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 1 o'clock, the Prime Minister has faced fresh questions about his decision-making, this time about handing a peerage to his former Director of Communications. Yesterday, Matthew Doyle apologised and had the whip removed over his ties to a former Labour councillor who was a paedophile. He campaigned for Sean Morton in 2017, who had been charged over indecent images of children and later pleaded guilty to the offence. Keir Starmer has faced questions from Conservative leader Kemi Badenoch during this lunchtime's PMQs.
I'm going to take no lectures from the Tories in standards in public life. She defended Partygate for months and months and months.
We weren't the ones stuffing government with hypocrites and paedophile apologists.
Canadian authorities are investigating one of the country's deadliest mass shootings after at least 9 people were killed. The suspect, who is also dead, opened fire at a school in a nearby home in Tumbler Ridge. More than 25 people were also injured. Detectives investigating a stabbing at a school in northwest London say the boys who were attacked are in a stable condition. Officers say their injuries are serious but not life-threatening. A 13-year-old continues to be questioned after police were called to Kingsbury High School in Brent yesterday. A report has found anti-Semitism in the UK spiked in the aftermath of the Manchester synagogue terror attack. A monitoring group recorded dozens of cases on the day and the day after last October's attack. Dave Rich is from the Community Security Trust.
There was a huge outpouring of sympathy for the Jewish community from across the country. And yet there's this small minority of people who are so gripped by hatred that they saw the Jewish people have been killed in a synagogue and they were actually excited by it, or they didn't want to believe it, or they wanted to use it as an opportunity to express even more hatred of Jewish people.
And Tottenham have sacked their manager Thomas Frank after just 8 months in charge. Spurs are 16th in the Premier League and just 5 points above the relegation zone. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 72 points at 10,426. The pound buys $1.36 and €1.14. LBC weather: prolonged spells of rain pushing northwards across northern areas. Heavier rain for Scotland, but briefly bright in the south with cloud and rain later. A high of 13 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Amelia Cox.
Quaker is an official sponsor of Team GB, and rightly so. After all, the rowing team's motto is Oats Move Boats. But why stop there? Team GB, if you're listening, try these on for size. Quaker sachets move Bob sleighs. Ugly bowl, forward roll. One for the gymnasts. The world's your stage when you eat some beige. Maybe just stick to Oats Move Boats. Quaker. Deliciously real, deliciously ugly. Sponsor of Team GB.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Sheila Fogarty.
Hello there, good afternoon to you. Now, Prime Minister's questions is frequently kind of pointless and sometimes ridiculous, and it bordered in a way on the ridiculous today, but of course there was the whole serious overarching question of the mood at the end of it for Keir Starmer after the week that he's had so far. And the reason I say it bordered on the ridiculous was the actual content of the exchanges, arguably, were you're terrible and you're awful at your job. No, turns out you're worse at your job. No, you can't control your party. In fact, you'll find you can't control your party. No, you hate women. No, you'll find that your voting record in Parliament proves that you hate women. That's the bit of it that was a bit ridiculous in my view. But the content of it and the pressure on the Prime Minister can't be dismissed quite so easily. I mean, that there was pressure from Kemi Badenoch on Keir Starmer around his judgment. They happened to involve his judgment around harm to women and children. Serious, very serious. But it definitely got under the Prime Minister's skin, I think. And then came Sir Ed Davey, who talked about his judgment as well in relation to what he called two paedophile supporters. He urged him to take responsibility. And Stephen Flynn of the SNP, who you might remember 2 days ago, predicted that the Prime Minister would indeed still be at PMQs this Wednesday. And so he was, accused him of being the most gullible former director of public prosecutions, about people not being honest with him. Here's a little clip, a little section of what Kemi Badenoch had to say.
Nobody buys it, Mr. Speaker. Not even the Labour women, because they know he always puts the Downing Street Boys Club first. And how dare he criticise us? We weren't the ones stuffing government with hypocrites and paedophile apologists. He can't build a team, Mr. Speaker. He has no plan. He can't even run his own office, let alone the country.
Well, I'm joined by Andrew Marr, presenter of Tonight with Andrew Marr on LBC, at Mondays to Thursdays from 6, as I'm sure you know. Andrew, I mean, he survived his own MPs and ministers. Did he survive PMQs, just about?
He did survive, I have to say. I was there for over half an hour sitting live watching it. I wish I had given that up and just listened to your 15-second summary, because it was perfect.
Thank
and
you.
I'd have saved
Good.
Myself a great deal of time.
Oh, I'm glad.
But no, I thought this did not go very well for him. One thing you can do when you're there is you can watch the Labour benches. And although they were roaring and stamping with approval in that private meeting earlier in the week with the Prime Minister, I didn't think there was a sort of underlying buzz of support around them at all. They were listening very, very hard to Kemi Badenoch's charge sheet, which wasn't, by the way, a brilliant charge sheet. She didn't mention Anna Sawa in Scotland calling for him to go. She didn't mention the words Wes or Streeting once. I was surprised by that. But she focused very much on the Matthew Doyle issue, which is really, really significant. I mean, it was all over the front page of the Sunday Times, and the Prime Minister went ahead. And you kind of wonder whether this defence of he misled me is any longer enough. If you can read it in the newspapers like the rest of the population, you really should know before you do this. But I thought the most significant moment, actually, was when Ed Davey, with whom Keir Starmer has had quite a genial relationship in the past, got up and really rubbed salt in the wound, repeated the charge, and then read out to the Prime Minister what the Prime Minister had said in opposition about Prime Ministers who don't take responsibility for their own actions but blame everybody else. And something that happens very, very rarely, Keir Starmer kind of lost it. He was absolutely furious.
And he was pointing with his finger, wasn't he?
Yeah. Just furious with him. And as I said on LBC yesterday, I've met the Prime Minister recently this week, and he is genuinely very, very angry. You know, he feels traduced. He's boiling with anger. But that's not a good look.
Well, let me talk about that exchange that you mentioned on your programme last night. It was it sounded, you can flesh it out if you wish, but it sounded like a fairly fleeting exchange between you and the Prime Minister. He said, you know, you are wrong about my fate. You are wrong about what's going to happen. I am going to prove you wrong. I am going to fight.
Yes.
I rather, in your telling of it, admired him for it.
I did too, actually. I mean, he sort of called me over. And it's a bit embarrassing because I have been quite rude about his stewardship of the country recently, to put it gently. And he said, it's very, very hard, Andrew. It's very, very hard to have your character kind of traduced and dragged through the mud like this. And I said, which is true, well, I've never done that. I've always said I thought you're an honourable and decent man, which, by the way, I absolutely do. But I then felt I was, again, honour-bound to go on to say, but, you know, I just don't see any way back for you, you know. I'll tell it as it is. And he sort of looked me in the eye and said, you are wrong. I am going to prove you wrong. I am going to fight.
Well, good for him.
And actually, that's what we need. And I thought it's a very significant change of tone or mood. And again, as I say, we saw it in the Commons just now. Because it's one thing to ease out a Prime Minister who is failing and replace him with somebody else, somebody better. Maybe by coronation or quickly or swiftly. It's a completely different thing to try to force out a Prime Minister who is determined not to go, who will fight.